I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Smashbox TV's podcast 489.
Schwabi has us. I saw he got a win. I think he's at like 392 or, yeah.
All right,
or
all right.
292?
No, probably more like 392.
392, I think it is.
Or yeah, more. Nonetheless, congrats to Schwebby. There's a lot of congrats that are going to get thrown around today. A pretty exciting podcast that we're excited to bring you guys here tonight. Things a little bit crazy going on in, what is it, the second? Well, just about the third week of January. We've been constantly talking about how kind of there's this slog during the offseason when things really just come to a complete crawl because there's not a lot of news, there's not a lot of movement and excitement. A few sponsorship departures, a few arrivals, some of that, but this last week...
Two of arguably the biggest names in our sport announced their new sponsors.
Yes, so that just took place over the last couple of days. We're excited to talk to both of them, and just like last week, we're going to have an exclusive brand new sponsorship announcement coming by the guy that's sandwiched between these other two we were just talking about, one Batman, Dutch Napier.
If you're Dutch and you want to announce a new sponsor, no better time than to go between Eagle and Gannon. Like, everybody's watching. You might as well announce.
I mean, the one guy in the world that has a Smashbox tattoo.
We give him the love.
He gets that special treatment. So we're going to have him, and then we're going to have Gannon. And all of that means we're kicking off with none other than one Eagle McMahon here tonight. Eagle, team MVP, Happy New Year. Wow. How does... The release of pressure, excitement, anticipation. How does that all feel?
I can go outside again.
Okay, fair enough.
Were you being like bothered or by people like when you would go outside, or did you just like all right, I'm changing out all my clothes for MVP. I guess I can't wear anything. Like, what's the plow? How come you can't go outside?
No, I mean it is funny because. I go to this gym in Boulder, and I thought there was like almost no disc golfers there. And I was like filling up my water bottle, and I hear someone say, "When's the announcement?" And I think they're talking to someone else. And then I like do a double take. I look over, they're looking right at me. And I'm like, "The announcement? What are you talking about?" This is before like anything was put out. And I'm like, what's your name?
Who hired you? Who sent you?
You really got to get
the foundation spy.
Yeah. I was going to say, you really have to get their screen name because, as you know, we've talked about before, there were rumors out there that you were going to MVP. It was, I don't know if leaked was the right word, because most of it is probably speculation. Someone heard something from somebody. How do you feel that some of that stuff gets out? Does it come from the factory? Does it come from yourself, where like maybe you tell somebody in confidence and they just can't keep their mouth shut? Like, hey, Dad, I said, cut it, Pat. You know, what's so how do you feel that stuff gets out?
So I actually think we did a really good job at keeping things secret. I think the speculation is just what overtook everything. And there became so much speculation that it almost became real. That's what it felt like. Because I think if I wasn't staying at Discmania, MVP was the place that everybody wanted me to be. So I think that comes from a lot of people just hoping. Not that many people really knew. Like Simon knew, obviously the people on MVP side. Discmania obviously knew that I left, but I didn't even tell anybody there where I was going. So I think it was just a lot of people putting two and two together, which created the general outline. But what? Generally speaking, I'm happy that it never like truly leaked.
Yeah, because I did see, I mean, I would say up until about a week ago, there was a lot of speculation, like Eagles going to MVP, like this is where he's heading. And then over the last week, I saw quite a bit of, well, maybe it's Innova. Like, I could see that. Mm-hmm. And some people are like, well, you know, I think Discraft hasn't made their team announcement yet. And there was, you know, there was a lot of extra the last week, a lot of second guessing as far as what was going on. So I think you guys did a pretty good job.
Was this real? There was actually Vegas bets on where I was going to go.
That I did not hear. Could it be true? Possibly. I think that would be pretty crazy because clearly there's an insider somewhere that definitely knew that, you know, probably kept their mouth shut. Obviously, as you just said, some people knew. That would be pretty crazy to have that unfold. But
my grandpa told me that. Like my grandpa was been like watching all the podcasts about where I'm going, and he knows where I was going. So I was actually scared that my grandpa was going to leak.
Grandpa lays down a fat C note in Vegas on Eagle going to MVP.
Yeah, no kidding. Now, kind of keeping in that text, I have so many questions, but right in that same line of thinking, Ricky Wysocki has specifically said, hey, I, you're not going to hear anything from my camp. Even if I know, you're not going to hear player announcement and player stuff from my camp. I want that star, whomever it is, to shine and have that moment. Do you commend that? Do you respect that? Do you care, as a fellow competitor to him? Is that kind of a notion you take as well? Or how do you react to Ricky's perspective?
Yeah, I definitely saw what Ricky said, and I definitely appreciate his input. And I see the whole picture because I didn't want anybody leaking it because there's a lot resting on the whole deal for all parties involved. So I think having it out in the public when it's not supposed to be isn't a good thing. But I also see how many disc golf podcasts, they get their content from things along those lines. So I'm like in the middle ground, like just because I don't necessarily like it doesn't mean I don't think it should exist. So I understand both sides, but being a player, I know that I would always want to keep a secret if someone asked me to. And if somebody is going to a big manufacturer, I know the implications of that. Making a big move. So I know that I'd always keep my mouth shut, and I do respect Ricky for making that post, even though that I think it's unlikely that people aren't this conversation is going to happen next year, the year after. It just is what it is.
Now, with all of that, I'll confide in that at Ledgestone, I had the pleasure of going out on my birthday with Simon. We ended up going to the casino, turned into a late night and a good time. We were sitting there, I believe, at about 3 a.m. finally, as the night was wrapping up. Your name came up. And not that everyone should know. I have friends and real friend conversations. And then I have, you know, my hat as a disc golf guy and as a media personality. And I'd like to think I keep them very separate and have no problem doing that. So I was at no point like poking around. But Simon admitted at that point, when your name did come up, he said, I could see him leaving, but MVP was not necessarily a front runner, or he didn't necessarily think MVP was a place that you would be heading. So I guess my question is, A, was he telling me the truth? And B, what were other conversations with manufacturers before you landed on MVP?
Right. So he was not lying.
Okay.
Around August. So this is my contract year, or 2023 was. I signed a 3-year deal with Discmania. I knew going into this year that something was going to happen, whether I re-sign with Discmania or I go somewhere new. And if I were to bet on it, I would have probably said that I was going to stay with Discmania. But as time went on, I said this on the Nick and Matt show, or Staggered Stance, but essentially there's a darker side. I wouldn't say call it dark, but a side to disc golf where it can be very repetitive out on the road. And going to Emporia, Kansas, you know, 2 times a year for the last decade can take a toll on you. And the fact is, switching it up sometimes is exactly what you might need, trying something new. And as the year went on, the more and more I felt like I wanted a change, especially being good friends with Simon, seeing his switch and seeing like him throwing this new plastic. And it almost feels like he had a complete renewal of his love for disc golf. And like the part of disc golf that I remember going to the disc golf store, trying out new discs, I felt like I lost that for a period of time. And that's not to say that it wasn't exciting when Discmania came out with a new disc. That was amazing. But to have, I don't even know, there's 80 plus discs in the whole MVP lineup. And those are all pretty much new to me to explore, try, feel. I just felt like a kid again. And this was a big part of why I was looking elsewhere. And I wanted to get that spark back. And a lot of people have talked about it too. Like when Paul switched from Innova to Discraft, mm-hmm. It's like you instead of having to go out and practice, you want to go out and practice. And that's exactly how I feel right now.
So were there any other talks with other manufacturers? I mean, did you go knock on Innova's, or did they knock on your door? Discraft, whoever in House of Discs. I mean, I don't know how exactly that's working these days, but were you in communication at all with other companies, or was MVP kind of just the perfect fit, so to speak?
Right. I, out of respect for other companies, I won't name names, but there was a handful of companies that my agency reached out to. I told them that, okay, I would like to see what they have to offer. And essentially my agent put together a little portfolio pitching Eagle McMahon to those companies and saying what we want, how can we collaborate, what can they offer, things along those lines. And I had talks with a few different companies, obviously including Discmania. So at the end, MVP showed the most promise. And I want to say this too, like the offers were competitive with everybody. And obviously I have, Discmania is the only disc manufacturer I ever had. And I owe everything to them. I'm extremely grateful. I just did a signing session up there and I hugged everybody at the warehouse. I absolutely love those guys and I want to see them thrive and excel in every way possible. But for the next 5 years, I felt like MVP has the most promise of any other company in disc golf, and I wanted to be a part of it. I wanted to reunite with Simon. I wanted to throw all their discs. I wanted to try Gyro out. So I feel like it was the place for me to be when you looked at the bigger picture. And everybody at the MVP that I've met, Brad and Chad, the two owners, it's incredible what they've built. I mean, the warehouse, their technology, and just their passion. They, when I went up there to Michigan last week, they literally they have bedrooms in the warehouse and they like don't leave the warehouse because they love their work so much. And that's just like, it's absolutely incredible. Talking with Chad, who's their disc designer, talking about what we can create in the future, giving me like science lessons on how discs fly. I'm like, this is where I need to be. And the fact that they shared that stuff with me, I already just feel very special.
So the 5-year contract with MVP, we know that, I mean, even today there was a we'll say a little with the release video, Simon and the Pixel. He's got the thanks a lot for that. Simon's got two discs in the Simon line. Are we going to see some sort of Eagle line? And is there a clever name for it yet?
So for right now, there's not going to be an Eagle line. That could potentially change in the future. And with other companies, they were offering an Eagle line, but I actually declined it because I feel like everyone, or at least a lot of big players, are getting their own line right now. And I don't think saturating the market's a good idea at this time. Plus, the one aspect of the MVP contract, it allowed me to be the most free out of the other offers I had. Mm. And I still have a lot that I want to accomplish in my career. And I feel like with the structure of this contract, I'm able to really focus on my game. That's not to say I still want to do a lot of cool promotional stuff, a lot of content on my YouTube channel, but I feel like I'm a true disc golf athlete now, and it's a really cool opportunity that I can essentially just go out and compete. So at least for the first year, 2 years, we're just doing Signature Series discs. If I start excelling with their product, World Championship, Elite Series, then maybe talk about an Eagle line, but I also want James to fill out his line, Simon to fill out his line a little bit more before stepping on their toes. I want to support them first and foremost.
Please share with us everything you can about what your contract consists of. Because there's, I'm sure, a million rumors.
Or restrictions.
Yeah, or restrictions. But I'm sure there's a million rumors. And then, to be fair, there's clearly some bars that have been set, some standards or perceived standards, and then even new ceilings that have been hit, going back to Paul, Ricky, obviously Simon, who is descript, but kind of not. Give us everything you can share about the details of your contract, and if that's on you or if that's on MVP in terms of what you're looking to share.
Yeah, I'd say right now we're trying to keep things pretty confidential in terms of the earnings and everything. I will say that I am very well taken care of, and it was a very good offer. And I don't want to get too deep into it because with legal reasons, all parties involved. But yeah, I'm happy with the contract. It's 5 years. We can expect a Signature Series discs each year. And I think the one thing that I can say is that there's a portion of the contract that's not based off royalties, which a lot of companies are purely royalty. So that's something that was unique to the MVP contract that I really appreciate.
Yeah, and with that, I was going to say, can you tell us where the scales tip in terms of guaranteed versus, like you said, royalties versus maybe even performance or bonus based, because I feel like every player has a slightly different perspective of a guaranteed amount versus, hey, I mean,
it feels like a lot of the bigger names these days, the performance bonuses maybe aren't even that big of a deal.
I feel like, yeah, every player's a little different. So that's why I guess, like, what were you concerned about in terms of a contract, whether it's MVP or anyone? What was some of the things you were looking for that a contract might consist of?
Right. Definitely a level of stability, because every company does it a little bit different. You know, I don't want to get too much into the details because a lot of the financial stuff can be a little bit a taboo subject. And legally speaking, I don't want to get myself into any sort of hot water. But with the MVP deal, just the financial stability, getting a paycheck every month, being able to plan for the future, have retirement, things along those lines, to know that if disc golf isn't the thing, and or at least a disc for me in 5-10 years, then I'm going to have something to fall back on. And that was one thing that I really wanted to make sure that I was doing, setting myself up for the future. That was first and foremost in terms of at least the financial aspect of it, and not having worries about it. Like, if I like to travel in a bunch of different ways. I like to take my van out to some events, but I also like to fly back and forth because I value my time back here in Colorado because I have all my doctors, practitioners, friends back here that I feel recharged when I come back home. So to be able to travel essentially any way I want and not think about the financial side first and foremost, or at least less so, that mm-hmm. was something moving forward that I think is going to help my game greatly when the rubber hits the road.
So do you have, with your contract, you talked about going to all these different events, and a lot of people right now are talking about their schedule, their 2024 schedule. I think the Dickersons announced theirs. I think maybe Paul even talked a little bit about his. Is there like a minimum number of events you need to hit? Are you even worried about that? Is it different the first year because of your shoulder? I mean, how is there anything about that that you can kind of discuss? And how many, and if you can, tell us a little bit about what your 2024 is going to look like.
Yeah, so I think that this part of contract I can share. They want me to play roughly around 20 events a year, give or take. This year is a little bit different because I am recovering off the surgery. So a little bit less will be fine. Chad, one of the owners, came and told me, like, don't be too hard on yourself this year. Like, we want you for the long run, and we want you to focus on your health. So that was really nice for him. But yeah, for this year, I would say my goal is to get back out at Champions Cup. Before would be nice, but right at Champions Cup is right at the 6 month mark for my shoulder surgery, and that's right at the time where the doctor is good with giving me the okay to return to competition. So I feel like that fits pretty perfectly. So in theory, I won't miss a major this year, and I'll still be able to get around 16 to 17 major and elite series events for the season, which is a pretty solid year. So not missing out on too much, other than obviously a few cool events to start the year. I think Waco's an elite plus, which obviously I'd like to be at, but I'm focused on coming back as strong as I possibly can and learning a new bag. So right now, just doing my PT exercises religiously twice a day, and I get to begin my return to throwing program next month. I'm working with my PT as well as Seth Munsey to put together the perfect regimen to get me back out there and better than ever.
And I know it's now hopefully completely in the past, but if you could just clarify, maybe hopefully one final time, what exactly was wrong? What had you tried? And then what did you do differently this time? So it's crystal clear for everyone.
Yeah. So I can take you through the whole saga. It was in 2021. I subluxed my shoulder, which essentially means like a mild dislocation. It was at a Jomez shoot right before the Pro Tour finale. So it was the last event of the year. Yep. So I almost made it to the finish line. But I just thought I tweaked my shoulder, not playing one tournament, not a very big deal. Strengthened over the offseason, felt kind of okay, but was just a little bit off, felt like a little bit unstable, and I was kind of getting used to it. And, you know, in retrospect, hindsight's 2020. I wish I got an MRI, figured out exactly what was going on. Went to Vegas, went to the All-Star event, played, and wasn't throwing forehands. Backhand felt okay, but I was so used to having a full game, backhand and forehand. So it threw me off a little bit. I can say mentally I wasn't really there, but after Vegas, I'm like, okay, something's wrong. I need to get an MRI. We found a torn labrum. And it was a mild tear in the labrum, which I'll revisit later because I know, but it's very mysterious what had happened. I figured, okay, I'm going to get back on the road. I'm going to get a stem cell treatment in the shoulder. What month was that? I think it was around May or June. So I went back out on the road. I played Champions Cup. I played Jonesboro. And I threw a forehand over the water, hole six at Jonesboro. Shoulder subluxed, and then I went home like, okay, something, okay, we got to get the stem cells. We got to do something. And I'm trying to go as conservative as possible, because surgery's scary. Like, I don't care what anyone says, just to go, mm-hmm. just be like, all right, I'm going to get surgery on my shoulder, which is my livelihood. I'm like, okay, I want to take any sort of different approach possibly for going under the knife. Got stem cells done, and I won European Open. So I was like, okay, maybe this is working.
I'm good.
I won a major without throwing a forehand. Everything was very promising. And while that was amazing, win the major, it kind of set me back, because if I was to start just playing after that, I might have figured out sooner or later that stem cells didn't do exactly what they needed to do. So it gave me this weird false confidence that I could just continue to rehab. So rest of the year, I played a few events, nothing crazy. 2022 was a really weird year. And then figuring everything was going to be okay, rehabbing the forehand, things were coming along. Sublux my shoulder again in the winter doing an exercise. I'm like, what is going on? I'm like, I'm too far in. I'm going to play this season to the best of my ability. And if things don't go the way I want to, then it's time for surgery. Had an underrated 2023 season, in my opinion. I didn't win any Elite Series, but I won two Pro Tour events on the silver. I think after Beaver State Fling, I didn't finish outside the top 10 until the Pro Tour Finals, which I got 11th, and that's a unique format. So I had a very solid year, finished the year ranked number one on UDisc. So even with a messed up shoulder, I still was able to finish pretty damn good at a lot of events. And that was just enough to be like, okay, with a good shoulder, I'm a contender every week. So figured just might as well do it. Want the forehand back. Surgery went well late October, and the surgeon went in and he saw the torn labrum. It was actually really small. What ended up being the issue was just some laxity in the joint. So just from throwing, getting it subluxed, was subluxed four times, just stretched it out. So there's just that underlying instability. So, I mean, I did two sessions of like rehab exercise every day all year. So I was in the gym every single day just to stay on top of it, make sure I was able to finish the season. So I was, while that, I'm proud of myself. I really want to just like put it behind me. And with the surgery, everything's gone very well since. He said the surgery went well. He tightened everything back up. And I'm excited with what I've done, the struggle I've had to go through. And, you know, even through some of the struggle and pain, I feel like I persevered and had some good moments during that that time.
Well, I mean, to be fair, as you just said, a disappointing year perhaps last year. You've gone through all of this and still found ways to pick up a few victories here and there, to still finish in the top 10, to do everything that you've done. Clearly, an injured Eagle McMahon is still better than most that are at full health, which is
well. Which I was watching impressive. Simon's video, and a lefty Eagle McMahon is better than most. As you were putting him out there, 350-ish or something left-handed. This is and watching you putt pretty decently. That's just stupid. I mean,
with you feeling,
you cut out. Can you?
Oh, I was just saying that a lefty Eagle McMahon is better than most people. Like, I was watching Simon's video and you were putting him out there 350 left-handed. Like, that's just stupid.
I try. I mean, I've unfortunately hurt my right arm a bunch in the past 5 years. I've had the broken hand. I've had shoulder implications. So there's been a lot of times of me throwing left-handed. So I hope I'd be pretty good at it by now.
Clearly, the entire world wants nothing but 100%, you know, health and recovery from you in this surgery. What are those, and I know you said that the doctors said it went well, what do you feel like those odds are? Or did anyone ever say, hey, even if this goes perfect, we think you're going to be 90% of who you were 5 years ago, or whatever those numbers are. Were you ever given any of that kind of diagnosis? Or
he essentially said it varies based on the individual. Okay. From my perspective, the doctor says that you're going to be able to return to better than what you were based on of his experience and what he sees. But also, like, it probably won't ever be exactly the same. Like, I'm okay. I'm honestly, if I can't throw a 500-foot forehand again, that's fine with me. And you don't really even need a 500-foot forehand.
That's what I've been saying.
Yeah.
No, you said that about 200. Oh. 200-foot forehand, Terry.
But yeah, like, I remember when ripping those forehands at the one thing I want to put out there that always I try not to put too much emotion into how I view comments on the internet, but this one always gets me charged up.
Okay.
Is everyone thinks I messed my shoulder up throwing forehand, and I didn't. Mm. It was a freak accident. I was doing just some crazy, stupid throw at this Joe Mess shoot that my arm was limp and I was just like dancing all over the place. It was terrible. It shouldn't have happened, but it wasn't from throwing a forehand. So that said, I want to get around a 400 to 450 foot forehand again. And I'm going to gradually strengthen up to that this year. Probably going to be somewhat similar to how I was playing last year. I'm going to test the waters, throw soft forehands, maybe some scramble shots, really try to develop a lefty. Ideally, if I could develop a 400 to 450 foot left to right lefty shot, mm-hmm. that can work on more open style shots where the control isn't paramount, I think that's great. And then forehands maybe in the more technical side of it, because I honestly don't want to go through this again. And the more shots I can create, the better. But I'm confident because I have a very good work ethic. I don't mean to pat myself on the back or anything, but if I set something up for myself, I'm going to do it. So I'm pretty confident that with a lot of hard work and dedication every day that I can get back to a new version of myself that in many different ways is better than the previous version of myself.
Stop me if you've heard this one. Have you ever thought about a turnover? Like I joke because I think when we first saw you come out with a lefty shot, maybe it was even at the All-Star event a few years ago. You threw a couple lefty shots, but I think I even said it on this podcast, like Eagles' biggest flaw, I think, in his game is just a slow turnover. Like those, what would be a big turnover for us, 250 feet, you know, just a little flip shot that you seem to struggle with at the time. Do you feel like this has or will help that, or would you rather focus on just throwing those lefty?
Well, I'd say I'm pretty good at it.
Yeah.
Honestly, I just don't. The thing is, it's hard to rewire your brain to want to throw a turnover when you are so used to not having to. Because with a 300-foot turnover is significantly harder than a 300-foot sidearm. Like, you can just chop it out there high and let it fall down, at least for me. So the idea to rewire my brain saying, okay, I need to throw a turnover for this now, which is there's a lot more variables. It's hard to like fall in love with that idea when you're under pressure and in the moment. So I would say, yeah,
you're better at them now. Cause I think I saw that as the years progressed after watching that your turnovers are better, but you'd rather throw the, like you said, the chop shot, the more consistent shot, so to speak. That makes a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And towards the, like, I strengthened my arm pretty good last year, and towards the end of the season, like I was starting to be able to throw like around close to 400 foot forehands again. Like if you watch Discmania Open, the playoff, the 6-hole playoff I have with Isaac, on all those approach shots on 18, I was throwing like 350 foot forehand in, and that's what won me that tournament essentially. So it started to come back towards the end of the year, but it just takes patience and gradual strengthening to get it back.
So as you, I'll say this is like another chapter in your storied career of disc golf, and you're turning this page and starting to write this new chapter. What are some of the things that you're hoping to look forward to that will be part of your legacy, part of your story, goals or aspirations? Have any of those changed? Like, but what are some of the things that you're really thinking like, yeah, once I'm healthy, ready to go, here is where I'm laser focused.
Right. So I would say this is obviously I'm always trying to be the best player I can be. And a lot of people like to assume that I want to win a world championship and USTGC, all the majors. And while that's completely true, like I have a personal goal, I want a career grand slam, and I'm working towards that. That isn't like the necessary driver for me. For me, it's more respectable if I can find a high level of play at every single event I go to. And I want to just feel genuinely proud of myself when I go out and compete. I want to feel proud that I played around a certain way, I acted a certain way. And that's been something that's always been tough for me because at my core, I'm a pretty fiery person, at least on the course. And I do my best to tame that. I've been doing my meditations. But I just want to really feel proud of myself as a person. I like to subscribe to the belief that a good person makes a good disc golfer, and that's something that I'm always consciously working on. So that's first and foremost. And something that's been coming to me a lot lately is I was watching old disc golf videos and just kind of reliving memories from when I started disc golf. I feel this isn't a bad thing. It's just because the growth of the sport, I feel like some of the grassroots parts of disc golf are starting to fade away. Mm-hmm. And the community aspect that I really miss, and just general like friendliness and happiness and sense of positivity. Like there's a lot more TMZ kind of drama involved with disc golf. And I think that's just par for the course as disc golf grows, but whatever I can do to kind of counteract that and just bring that childlike joy of disc golf back, I'm trying to figure out ways to do this, maybe through my content. I want to have stuff to give away when I'm out at tournaments. I just really want to focus on like making disc golf feel great for everybody. And because that's what hooked me on disc golf, and it's the reason why all of us love it. So moving forward, that's one of my big goals.
With all of that being said, and I think that's so commendable and exciting that you have those feelings and that nostalgia, and you're even recognizing that, yeah, we are losing a little bit of this, I'll say, intimacy and camaraderie among, you know, the smaller groups because of the growth. With all of that being said, you and Simon are two of the most liked and popular and entertaining competitors we have in our entire sport. How have you thought about that balance of, man, I just had a great round or I just had a terrible round, but there's 500 fans here ready for an autograph. And that wasn't a problem even 5 years ago, but now, and problem is I'll put that in air quotes, but now it's a totally different ballgame out there. And with all that engagement and everything you just mentioned, what are some of the things you've thought about in terms of, you know, collectively embracing, but not burning yourself out?
That's a very good question. And I'll be the first to say it. Like, I'm not perfect. There's been times where I've had a very bad round and I have not been in the headspace to sign an autograph. And I've walked past little kids putting their disc out, and like, I look back at me at that moment and I wish I would have just persevered and put myself aside to sign it, because I would have been happier in the long run. But there's certain times where it almost feels impossible to put yourself aside for that moment. And while I'm saying this, I hope that I hold myself accountable, but there's probably going to be that time again for me. But if I can minimize those moments and I can like truly take perspective on what disc golf is and what it's done for me and it's done for everybody else, it's cliche, but it's really all about love, like love for the game, love for what you do. And if you can like notice that and be grateful for it, I think that's going to be like a superpower for those times. And, you know, there's so many different pieces of the puzzle. Like, I'm not going to be the guy who says that it's not about the money, because there is a level of financial aspect of it. But now that, like, I am very well taken care of MVP, like, I want to share that in some capacity. Like, if I have the means to, you know, take some extra time, sign some discs, then that's something that I'm going to be striving for moving forward. At the very least, like, setting rules for myself. Like, at the very least, you can spare 15 minutes after your round, no matter what. Like, just make that a part of your round, at the very least. If you have a great round, if you have time, stay longer. But at the very least, 15 minutes after the round, sign some discs, and then be on your way.
This might be a tough question. You talk about fans and fandom. One of the best memories, I think, that people, or visions maybe, that people have the last couple of years is you at the European Open after the round. Whether you won or lost, you were surrounded by kids and people and throwing discs. And how much of that had to do with you being on Discmania versus them being a fan of Eagle? And do you hope that you can kind of bring that over? I saw a graph today from, I think it was Power Grip, that showed the popularity of manufacturers, which I'm assuming is in Europe, over the last, I think, 5 or 10 years. And you see how a lot of, now that we've got more manufacturers, they're starting to compress. Innova used to be dominant. Now it's much, I think Discmania was the dominant one. MVP was like third behind Innova or something over in Europe. I'm not exactly sure. But how much of that do you feel you're going to be able to retain with the fans over in Europe? Or are we going to see, you know, our guest later tonight take that mantle from you, Mr. Gannon Burr, as he steps into the Discmania camp?
It's hard to say. I would like to say that we're going to retain it. But at the same time, Discmania, first and foremost, is a European brand, and they got their foothold over there. Prodigy and Discmania are two of the biggest brands over there, because they're able to meet the demand. A lot of Discmania, Latitude, they make discs over there, and it's cheaper to buy discs made in Europe. There's no export import fees. So that's a big reason. And obviously Discmania does an incredible job marketing. They marketed me, they marketed Simon, they marketed their team very well. And, you know, at the European Open, at a lot of events over there, a lot of stores, you go to stores, you see banners of myself, Simon, or whomever that's on Discmania over there. So I owe a lot to them for helping me build that European brand. But moving forward, a lot of companies, including MVP, has their eyes set on the European market. They see the growth, and they're trying to figure out ways to make importing their discs more feasible, and setting up some overseas headquarters.
Was there any part of you that factored in House of Discs, just generically? The fact that there is this, you know, venture capitalist group that has, you know, has consumed or has acquired a number of our companies, and some of the conversation immediately went to, well, if Eagle leaves, he would go outside of House of Disc or inside or whatever. I mean, those were all part of the speculations for a lot of different, you know, for a lot of different reasons. Did any part of the House of Disc existence factor into you or any of your decision making?
I would say, I'd be lying to say no, but a lot of the reasons why people think I left Discmania aren't really true at all. Like I was saying, the primary driver was me wanting a change, but there's definitely a small portion of uncertainty what this big conglomerate of companies buying disc golf companies might entail. I hope it works out great. I hear that they're doing very well at the company, so, you know, I hope if a rising tide lifts all boats, so my best to them. But this kind of alludes to the question or the answer I gave you guys about losing some of the grassroots aspects of disc golf. I like supporting small companies. I like mom and pop things. So the fact is like, I more identify with things along those lines. And while MVP is growing very rapidly. Seeing Brad and Chad, it's a family operation, which I just think is so cool. So I would say there's a portion of me that was weary, but it wasn't the driving factor per se.
So to follow that up, and kind of you just alluded to it or touched on it, if we could, just for a moment, dive into some of the most ridiculous or the silliest or the funniest that were still obviously wrong. What were some of the things that you and your camp, whether it's your dad or your grandpa, what were some of the things that you saw or read or watched that now we can truly laugh at or dispel? Or completely shoot down, whatever it is. Misconceptions, basically, is what I titled this, of your moving. What were some of the things that were your favorite and not so favorite that got thrown out there?
Well, the thing is, I'm trying to find a balance in my life for pretty much everything, because there's so much value in reading comments and like interacting with the disc golf community.
Mm-hmm.
But if I want to ruin my day, I could just go read comments and find mean things about myself and feel
all day
terrible.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, it's hard finding a balance of that, because while all the amazing comments are so great and I'm grateful people go out of their time to write them, for some reason, the human brain just like phases those out, and you just want to hear the bad ones. And then when someone says something like, "Oh wow, your nose is crooked," or you know, "Your beard doesn't look good," like those are just some mild ones. But then I don't even need to name the mean ones. Then like you just start thinking like bad stuff. So like it's not a positive thing, which. When I first started playing disc golf, like none of that really existed. The community was so small, and like every once in a while you get that one guy, and you didn't really, I mean, it wasn't great, but you kind of just set him aside, but they've multiplied. And I shake it off pretty good, but it definitely feels like a little bit of a punch in the gut for a short period of time. And then I realized like that, I hope that guy has some good things happen to him, because he needs it.
Yeah. So what was the dumbest? Just give me the dumbest or most outlandish like take that someone, you know, threw out there or that got, you know, back to you. Was there any that were just like, "Oh my gosh, what are they even thinking that could possibly be a solution?" Was there anything that was just crazy to you?
I feel like there were, but they're eluding me right now. I'm going to be like going to bed, and it's going to come back. I'll try to think of something. If something pops in my head for the remainder of this conversation.
So you were or are still sponsored by Grip Bag Company?
That was going to be a question. What are some of your other continued relationships like, and have some of those had to be trimmed back or adjusted?
Grip hasn't officially announced me yet, but I'm staying with Grip for at least another year. Smashbox exclusive.
Yes.
I had to cut ties with Whale Sacks. Okay. I owe a lot to them. You know, Tina and Eric, they're amazing. Eric's
Did you send back all the halves of the whale discs?
Oh, ouch. Ouch. He's like, "Hey, maybe you could sew these back together.
You can reuse these."
Ouch.
Come
ouch.
On. That's
you mean guy on the internet. It was Johnny. Johnny was making all those comments.
Come on. That's like one of the common ones, that Eagle rips whale sacks. It's one of the funniest ones.
I mean, at least it is true. Factually, it's true.
I mean, Paul folds putters. I've seen it. You know?
Yeah, that's...
don't we all?
Other relationships, you've been wearing some shoes, Vivos, right, for a while now. Is there an official relationship there still, or was there, or is there?
There is official relationship. I'm more on the ambassador side, which they don't necessarily ambassador team. They don't have a team section, but no, I have an affiliate link that I get some kickback on, and I have a code, and I'll get an occasional free pair of shoes, you know, better than nothing. But I appreciate them just like willing to support disc golf in any way, because they're great shoes. I'd be wearing them even if I didn't have any affiliation with them. So mm-hmm. just like I said, using the products that I truly believe in is something I want to focus on. Focusing on that integrity is something as I get older, that's becoming very important to me, because a lot of what I do is promote. That's mm-hmm. part of being a disc golfer. And if you can promote something in good conscience, something that you truly use and want to share with people, then it's just better for everybody.
So with that, just a recap so we know, and I know we kind of usually leave this for the end of the interview, but we'll see you still with Grip, still Vivo shoes. Is there any other, I guess apparel or stores or anything else, that any other sponsorships that you're still part of?
For the time being, still with Huck Lab. We're going to maintain our relationship. It's a pretty informal relationship, but Jay's my good friend, and I like to collaborate with him as much as possible. I'm continuing my relationship with Backstage Organics, which is very exciting. I haven't talked to Seth about it. I technically am a part of Disc Golf Strong. Mm-hmm. Seth's a great friend, and I can just bounce ideas off of him whenever. And I highly recommend anybody go be a part of the Disc Golf Strong movement. If you're have any sort of pain or just looking to get stronger within disc golf, then, you know, Seth is has amazing resources, and he's helped me tremendously throughout the past however much time I've known him.
Well, I want to quickly talk about the other big announcement on Simon's video. The other sponsorship announcement, Ratana on MVP as well, huh?
Yeah.
She got, can you tell us a little bit about that? I don't want to say her contract, so to speak, but like, what is her relationship with MVP now? And what's her plans for the year?
Yeah. So she's extremely excited. She started falling in love with the discs. Like it was a prospect of me being on the team, and she just started throwing them, and she loved the glitch. She loved some of the more understable stuff. And it's amazing, because MVP saw the potential in her. Like, I want to say that MVP's team is still pretty – it's on the smaller side right now. So they're looking for a lot of talent. And Ratana is making – you know, she's making a lot of progress in her game. She's come a long way. She won her first A-tier last year. She was – one stroke out from making the cut at Portland Open. And, you know, she's coming a long way, and MVP saw the potential in her, and it's being on MVP is going to enable her to be able to play a lot more tournaments out on the road moving forward and continue her professional career. So I'm absolutely stoked to have her on the team. Traveling with her has made disc golf so much more fun, and, I'm very grateful to her, and we're going to hopefully start creating some more MVP content and spread the love.
And your dad, Pat, I saw in the video as well. Is he full MVP bag, or is he still holding on to some old things that he loves? Because he's not required to throw anything.
So the funny story, my dad, when I was on Discmania, he had a few Discmania discs. Like He definitely enjoyed like the MD3, some of the Cloudbreakers, Razor Claw. I got him to switch to the P2, but he always liked his old Rocks, Firebirds. He's kind of like a old school Innova guy to a certain extent. Now, this is the most excited I've ever seen him about discs. He has pretty much a full gyro bag. I think the only thing that might stay in his bag is like a really old beat up DX Rock, and then some old Blizzard bosses that he just really likes. But even those, like he's testing out Fission Octane, some of the Fission stuff from MVP that hopefully will knock out those bosses. And I don't know, the DX Rock will be a tough one for him to replace, but he's a gyronaut now. It's pretty crazy.
Yeah, a good, I'll say this, you know, I know everyone's sponsored by different people. A really good worn-in rock is a hard thing to get rid of. I mean, it's everybody has said it. I begged one for many, many years, a glow one, but it eventually left my bag. So Pat's got time, don't worry.
And with that, I'll say your dad is probably one of the closest people to disc golf and their child's career. Of course, there's other dads that are very supportive and are involved, but your dad is probably one of the most active and actively involved and intimate with you and your
entire,
the community and just all of disc golf. So that begs the question, what were some of the conversations like when sponsorship came about? What were some of the conversations and what kind of insight or push or nudge or back away? Like, what was his approach to, you know, this life-changing decision for you?
One thing I want to throw out there, a question that my dad always says, it's more of a rhetorical question, is he always asks, am I the most famous disc golf dad?
He's like, up there.
I think you are.
Yeah.
He's definitely.
I don't know. Who else?
I mean, the Robinson's father has been out there doing some work lately.
Creeping a little bit up on that.
Being on some bags, and then your kid winning a Worlds and being part of it. Doug Bjorkus, you know, over with now Grady and Paige, of course. Rest in peace, Leroy Jenkins, one of the kindest, most amazing humans on the planet. And then
Paige's dad?
The family.
Yeah, he's been around for a while.
Paige's dad, yeah.
But I think Pat's the most involved. Honestly. Yeah.
So
right. I think what helps is he's in a lot of my videos, so people really get to see the personality of him. And he doesn't seek it out, but he definitely thrives on it. He likes being on camera.
Awesome. Well, so with all of that, what again, life-changing decision, and the guy that's been there for every moment of your career. What were some of the things, maybe even just high level, that got discussed?
As you know, it's like we've been through this whole disc golf journey together. We started playing at the exact same time, so he's been there every step of the way, and I couldn't have done without him. He's absolutely incredible. He's been a mentor in so many different ways, and just somebody that I can go and celebrate or cry to after a really good or bad moment. So talking to him about who I was going to represent was a huge decision. And I just remember, we're talking about a little bit today, like talking to other sponsors. I just remember the one moment. He's like, you have to go with MVP. It's the only one that truly makes sense. So we talked through pretty much almost every detail on all different offers that I had. And without him, you know, it would have been a way tougher decision, because he understands the climate disc golf. He understands a good amount about like the product side of it and where companies are going. So we both came to agreement, and he supports my decision to represent the MVP family. So, and he's a part of the MVP family now. So it's all great.
And speaking of representation, you mentioned earlier, you know, kind of your team and contracts getting, you know, what you were looking for, and your representation was helping with that. Who makes up your team right now in that regard? Who's kind of representing you and your brand in that sense?
Oh, in terms of like an agent?
Yeah, agent or whatever, someone brokering any deals or being part of that.
So it's Feature Card Management. They work pretty closely with Paul McBeth Foundation, and they also represent a small handful of other players.
Okay.
Blake Iverson, Dustin Leatherman, Zach Smith, those are the main guys there. And they're a great group of guys. I've been working with them for a few years now, and makes my life a lot easier when talking to certain companies, have any sort of new opportunities, just streamlines the process.
Okay, great pun there. With that, I was thinking earlier today. I haven't quite the perfect analogy yet, but I kind of feel like, and I've said this very publicly, when MVP came onto the scene, it was like, what is this gimmick? What are these weird looking Frisbees? I sold thousands of Frisbees every year, and I was like, I ordered some, and I'm like, what are these? And were these going to be a flash in the pan? I think fair enough that a lot of people kind of said that or guessed that. And clearly they've done nothing but grow and build and thrive throughout these last few years, making all these big moves and being so scientific and analytical in terms of even their naming structure and convention. I feel like maybe a couple of the guys that weren't the most popular just maybe got like the two best dates to the prom or something like that and picking up like you and Simon. I mean, just two of the most popular, well-liked people now on the team, now within the family. What has it been like with the Gyronauts and the whole idea of this entire new fan base and family that was already here? Some of them have been here for the long haul. Now here comes, a front runner for homecoming king or prom king. Here you are. What's that been like?
It's been eye-opening because I talked to Brad and Chad about and what the origins of MVP are, and the whole history of it's really cool because their dad's the person who got into injection molding. MVP doesn't necessarily stand for this now, but it stood for Maple Valley Plastics, which they did injection molding for GM, Ford, some of the car companies in the Rust Belt area because it's a Michigan-based company. From my understanding, their kids took – or Don Richardson, Daddy MVP, was the inspiration for Brad and Chad to get into injection molding. And they were disc golfers, so like, okay, let's try making discs. And what I really appreciate about them is that they've really focused on manufacturing and getting the science down first. And like you, when I first saw MVP, I'm like, what is this? And I would say, I remember the first big signing they had. I think it was Sarah Hokum. And when she went to MVP, I'm like, wow. They're getting a big player. So that's kind of the moment when people started looking. And then obviously when James went to MVP, that was a big moment because that was MVP making like a big move. Mm-hmm. And that kind of put him on the map, so to speak. And then obviously with the Holy Shot, talking to them about what it was like watching, they were saying they're running around their warehouse. And the minute that shot went in, they started production of blue and yellow Envies because they knew, and they couldn't even keep it in stock. They said it was it was absolute madness. And I would say to a certain degree, this me being here is a ripple event of that to a certain degree. Like they've rode the wave just how you should moving forward. And like Brad is the more business-minded. They're both very business-minded, but Brad's more the marketing director and guy who calls the shots on a lot. Chad's more of the disc design, nerdy side of the company. Mm-hmm. But when you put their brains together, they've been very calculated. They've done everything they can to grow themselves and be a force to reckon with within the disc golf community. And I still think they got a lot to prove. They're still underdogs in many different cases. And while Gyro to a lot of people probably has seemed like a gimmick, it absolutely is not, because Chad gave me the rundown of the science. It's like when it's done right, it actually works better than all the other discs, because the more weight you can have pushed out, the more torque resistant, wind resistant the disc is going to be, the more durable. So I'm sold on Gyro, and I can't wait to fully explore my bag, fully explore all those molds, because I believe that it's going to make me a better disc golfer.
And I was going to say, we would be remiss if we didn't get to the release of your first disc. Tell us about your first disc. Yeah. It's some sort of Envy. I know that it's a, what exactly is it?
So it is a Envy in the Prism Proton Plastic. And I always envied the Envy not being on MVP because I'd always grab it. I'm like, this is the exact disc I need. I love the profile on it. It's shallow. It's a hybrid between a mid-range and a putter. And I just felt like it was always the disc I needed. And then, of course, when James hit that shot, the shot, my beliefs were essentially corroborate. I'm like, okay, so that's what you need to win a world championship. Makes sense. So I've always had my eyes on the Envy. And when we're talking about my first Signature Series disc, I have a Prism Proton Pyro that I saw. And essentially what Prism Proton means is Proton is kind of the, I'm just going to use Innova as a comparison. It's like the champion style look. It's a translucent color. And the Prism aspect of it is the rim. So when you combine the rim with the inside plastic, that would be Prism Proton. So there's a Prism Plasma option as well, which is like more of a champion style rim mixed with a star type plastic. I just thought the Prism Proton looked super pretty and it felt really good in my hand. So I just figured for my first disc, I'm going to be bagging the Envy no matter what. I already know it's going to be my go-to disc. So what better disc would be than this here Prism Proton Envy? And the stamp, shout out to Mike Incho, the graphic designer. It's an eagle surrounded by flames. So I guess you could call it a phoenix, but I don't want to step on the Firebird's toes. But this stamp is called Rebirth because I feel like it's the perfect way to depict and illustrate my move to MVP with all that's going on, shoulder surgery, a new chapter. I'm rising from the ashes into flames.
Perfect. Absolutely perfect. And with that, I know you're going to be making a ton of content, as you said, for yourself, because you're going to be out there learning the plastic and then wanting to share your journey. And I'm sure the fans are going to absolutely love that. And you're going to be creating new fans. You're going to be bringing along your old fans that were following you when you were throwing Discmania. It's all going to be very exciting. I want to personally, as we start to let you go, I want to personally just say thank you. I'd like to share with the world that you reached out to me and had said, hey, I'm planning on releasing the news, or it's going to come out. Initially, it was going to come out yesterday. And you talked about then joining us on the show and giving us the opportunity to have a conversation with you. We know that you're going to get pulled in a million directions and everybody's going to want to have you on the show. And I know you're, you know, you've obliged to a handful of them, but thank you so much for thinking of us and for coming on to share all of this with us and the rest of the Smashies out here. When I think back to you and Glass Blown Open,
was that 2015 or 2016?
2015,
before the pro tour.
I remember thinking, who is this kid? He throws a mile.
We have you on live when Smashbox was the only one providing live disc golf, just a handful of us. Fast forward a couple years later, you turned 18 on a podcast. You were here talking to us. I think the night you turned 17 into 18, you were here with us. And we just have to say, just, you know, we could echo thousands of fans out there. We just absolutely love and appreciate everything you've done for the game, and then also how you've portrayed yourself and acted for the fans and everyone else that's out here taking it all in. And we couldn't be happier for your successes, and we're looking forward to what's in these next few chapters for you.
Well, I really appreciate it, guys. You've been there for the whole thing. You've been outside looking in, and I really do appreciate you guys, so I wanted to give you one of the first opportunities. I'm going to keep my circuit pretty small just because I have a lot of stuff that I want to do myself, but I wanted to pay my respect to you guys because I really do appreciate what you guys do for the disc golf community. For, gosh, I remember watching Disc Golf Guy videos like a good 5 to 10 years before I even met you, so it's like you go way back, so I truly am grateful for you guys.
Well, thank you so much.
I want to give you a moment to defend something, though, that you said the other night. I was watching one of your Instagram lives. You were going through a bunch of vinyl, And at the very end,
oh, I know this.
At the very end, it killed me. It hurt me. You said Creed is a better band than Pearl Jam.
What?
And then
end
you,
the show. Cut him off.
No, that's what I he did. He, then he cut off his Instagram stream.
Oh, I cut him off now. I'm just hearing that part.
Yeah, I know.
I don't know. Okay, I take back everything I just said.
I was watching, right. And I was like, oh, those are some fun. I'm not a vinyl person, but I was like, some of those are some good albums.
I'm
not a jam band guy, but some of the stuff you had was really good. I was like, oh, some of this stuff is awesome. And then you ended the show like that, and I was like, nope. I don't know. Jeez.
Man.
You want to defend that, or do you just want to just let that?
Or do we just cut you off?
I mean, I know you were young when those came out.
Do I think Creed is a better band than Pearl Jam? Objectively, no, I don't. Because I know, I mean, Pearl Jam, they were part of the grunge movement. Like, go back, like, Eddie Vedder is incredible. I love the Into the Wild soundtrack. One of my dad's favorite bands is Pearl Jam. Pearl Jam never really resonated with me. I listened to some of their albums, like, Ten's a really good album. But it just never rung true for me. But I just remember as a kid, I was gifted Creed Greatest Hits, and I was watching
the one song.
I was gonna say both songs.
There's a ton of good Creed. I don't understand why Creed gets the hate they do. Like, I understand why Nickelback gets the hate they do.
Okay,
it's
okay.
Silly.
Mm-hmm.
But personally speaking. This, I'm probably losing a lot of fans here.
I was just going to say, you might have just wanted to plead the fifth here.
I just feel like music in general, people are on their high horse too much because people just jump in and like, the cool thing is to hate Creed. The cool thing is to hate Justin Bieber. And like, I listen to so much different kinds of music. I just listen to what sounds good. And if Creed sounds terrible to you, then so be it. I think some of the songs are pretty dang good, to be honest.
Okay. And
I will say, like, I would never rip on anyone for any of the music they listen to. You know, whatever they want to, whatever floats your boat is great, in my opinion. I think it definitely hits different depending on your ages.
For sure.
Like, Terry and I,
considering us.
Pearl Jam 10 came out when we were, like, 13.
Yeah.
And like, that is the prime time of kids getting into music, and you know, for us, you know, we'd get our 5-disc or single disc changer out. So I get it if you're young and Creed, Arms Wide Open. I think I've told the story on the podcast before. I went on a Disney cruise with my kids and my wife and some friends. The lead singer of Creed was on there with his wife and kids. And
wow.
And
I manning the lifeboats, or what was he doing?
No, he was there. The funniest thing, I looked at him and I'm like, God, that guy looks familiar. Like, because he didn't have his long hair, it was shorter. And then I walked by him, and he's in pretty good shape.
Scott Stapp, right?
Scott Stapp. Yeah. And I knew his name, too.
He was wearing a Stapp shirt.
No, it's not Scott Stapp. He has a tattoo on his arm of a cross that says, Arms Wide Open. And I was like, yeah, that's definitely him. I know for a fact. And, so I thought that was pretty funny. And I nudged my wife. I'm like, that's the Creed guy. And she's like, what? I'm like, Arms Wide Open, and she's like, oh, and she didn't care after that. I thought it was fun, though. So.
All of this goes off the rail. What a good time we were having.
Do yourself a favor. Go listen to My Own Prison by Creed. Jam it. You're welcome.
Yes. Yeah. All right. Eagle, one final time. Besides maybe that note, give us one final sign-off. We'll let you go after that. Thank you for joining us. Any final words before we cut you loose?
Yeah, so I just want to thank Discmania. I want to stress how grateful I am to Discmania to getting me where I am today. I have nothing but love for their company, and I wish them the absolute best. Still talk with UC a bunch. A lot of the employees are still my great friends. So thank you, Discmania, for this whole establishing me in disc golf. I couldn't be more grateful. And now thank you, MVP. Thank you for this opportunity. Thank you, Axiom Streamline. For the next 5 years and hopefully more, I can't wait to see what it brings, because everybody involved, everyone that I've talked with, I truly believe we're going to make some amazing things happen. To be on the same team as James, Simon, Sarah, my girlfriend, and I'm missing a lot of other people, but the Paul Kranz, we have an amazing team now. Mm-hmm. And I think we have a lot to prove. And
Silva too, right? Silva Saarinen?
Yeah, Silva Saarinen.
Yeah, Silva.
Well.
That's a really good pickup. And
absolutely.
Thank you guys for being here through it all. Thank you to all the fans. And I'm just really excited for the future.
All right, everyone. Thank you again for the time, for the dedication of the sport, the love of the game. It obviously oozes from you and every time you speak to us. And I think the fans all recognize that as well. And we're looking forward to the continued excitement. We wish you the best. We know you have some recovery and some hard work, and we know you're going to put in that time and effort. And like you said, hopefully, worst case scenario, the first major of the year is when we'll see you out there competing again, maybe a little earlier, but get 100% healthy, and we're looking forward to seeing
for sure.
So, all right, everyone, that's Eagle McMahon, team MVP. Have a good night. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Eagle. Guys.
See ya.
Later.
Wow. Just, it even sounds funny to say team MVP. Like, just, it's going to take a while to see that. I mean, he looks good in the clothing.
In the attire, yes.
In the attire. I hope we get to see, just like he had with Dismania, I hope we could see a jersey of some sort.
Sure, we're going to see, yeah.
Go out and watch Simon's video. It's really funny. If you haven't seen it, I'll spoil a little bit. Simon kind of hides at the MVP factory or manufacturing facility and surprises Eagle and gives him a gift. And just go and watch that. Do yourself a favor. It's a lot of fun. Eagle is just a wonderful human being in general.
Yes. So great to have him. And again, so gracious that he had reached out to me. I know a lot of people last week were, you know, obviously waiting and anticipating, and then there's a lot of speculation going on. And when I had known at the time, he had said, Monday's going to be the announcement. I want to talk to the guys at Staggered Stance, and then I also want to come on with you guys on Tuesday. So it worked out really well, and then things actually got pushed back to today. Great to have him and get all the details, and clearly a pretty big moment. So, and with this, as we are getting ourselves all lined up and ready to go, incredible conversation with one Eagle McMahon. And Eagle, like we were talking about, in our early days, Smashbox covered the first time he was ever live on an event. When he was live, it was right here on Smashbox when we had like two cameras covering all of the action at best, and like four total people working to pull off a live broadcast, three or four.
Hey, why does the Pro Tour need like 45 people?
Yeah, do they need all that? We can do just it go back four. Old school and make it happen. And one of the gentlemen that was part of our old school introduction into live disc golf came onto the scene, had an incredible showing at the MVP, and at the time, I believe that was called probably still the Vibram, because it's had 30 different names.
Maybe the Maple Hill?
Maple Hill, I don't know. It was the Vibram Open. Came onto the scene and had traveled from the Kentucky, Tennessee region, that general area, up into Maple Hill to compete, and it was exciting to also put his name on the map in addition to his incredible play. We just help shine a spotlight on it. And that is our next guest, Dutch Napier, Batman.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
How you doing, buddy?
What's happening? Doing good, man. How are you guys?
We are good.
We're great.
We are good. Welcome to the show. It's so good to have you. There's been a lot. Thank you. There's been a lot of talk and chatter with a lot of different players, and you were part of that conversation as well this year. You, a few weeks ago, made an announcement. Kind of talk about your journey up until tonight and what's been going on with you.
I parted ways with Prodigy Disc after nine total seasons. And you know, if it wasn't for you guys on the Smashbox doing the live coverage, I probably never would have got the shot. You know, after I got on that Maple Hill coverage in 2014, I got a phone call from Dave Greenwell, you know, introduced me to the Prodigy family, and made sure that I had had some disc in my hand by the time I got home. So you know, with that, he spoke with everybody throughout the company and got me signed on. They had me a box of disc you know, late in that 2014 season, and then moved forward from there, all the way up until this year. So,
yeah, you are one of the longest running Prodigy sponsored players, other than probably the original crew that they signed.
Yeah, just a couple of them.
Yeah, you had to be one of the first actual signings for Prodigy the next year, right?
Yeah, well, I think I might even sign the contract at the end of the 2014 season. So, I mean, it might have even been then, whenever I signed with them to say that I would exclusively throw their disc, you know, but I do think that, Daniel Polk from up in Minnesota, I think he was right there along with me about the same time too.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, he might have been he might have been before me or maybe after me, but you know, I was still rapping them for that long.
Yeah, it's been quite a journey for you, as you mentioned Danny as well, who used to live in Wisconsin, then moved over to Minnesota, and part of that crew. You know, a lot of these names that we have talked about, you know, a Paul Macbeth we saw very early on and took to touring very early on. Ricky Wysocki, you know, 2010, won a Junior Worlds. By the next year, won his first major, immediately went to touring. And so many of these other players, I could name, you know, two dozen of our other touring players. Your path was different, though. So how were you different from those other guys? Because all of a sudden, we just saw you at Maple Hill, and you were on the map. But talk about getting there and why it's different for you.
Yeah, for me, I played advanced. I played amateur for a couple of years. I think in 2007 might have been my first amateur event. So I went to 2008 Amateur Worlds in Kalamazoo, Michigan. Ooh. And like at that point, they kind of had me for one of the favorites to be in the tops. And I did not perform. You know, I wound up finishing like 80th place or 87th. I don't know. You'd have to go back and check, but it wasn't very good. It wasn't to the expectations, you know. And from there, I went to the next weekend after I got back home was a tournament at my home course. And, you know, I had some 990 to that low rated 1,000 players in the open division. I said, you know what, I'm just going to play open. And I wound up winning the tournament and won my first ever open tournament. And whenever I won that tournament, I decided never to look back. You know, I accepted cash right away and then started moving forward. I think 2010 was probably my first Pro World Championships in Lemon Lake.
Mm-hmm.
And then I went to USDGC with Eric Roadhouse and caddied for him. And that was kind of whenever I started learning more about the disc and the flight and how to make it move and different things like that. Because whenever I showed up to USDGC to try to qualify on Monday qualifying, that was our deal. If I qualified mm-hmm. on Monday, then I didn't have to caddy for him. I could play in the tournament. But if I didn't make the Monday qualifying, I wound up caddying for the week. So, but needless to say, that's where I met like Felberg and Climo and mm-hmm. those guys, being around the right people. And then, you know, that's kind of whenever I started getting taught how to actually play the game of golf. And I went out on tour after that and played a lot of the NTs that I could. And I just took my bumps and my bruises, you know. I kept paying my dues and paying my dues. And I went to Maple Hill in 2014 and played the best round of my life, you know, and got on Smashbox. I was I think I was in the lead by a stroke over Kella Visca, and Dave Felberg might have been one or two back, you know, and people seeing this guy amongst all the big names, and I think Dana Vici was the fourth on our card. But yeah, people seeing me in that that aspect, and then so I had an early tee time too. I don't know if you remember this, Terry, but whenever y'all were doing the live coverage of the first round, I'd already got done with my round. I went in, I took a shower. I was staying at the house there with Tom and Karen, and I was decked out in all my Batman gear. I had my Batman hat, so. But that's kind of where I came about and when I went on board.
And one of the key components that you didn't even touch on there is, you took your lumps and you weren't necessarily a household name like some of those other people, but you were paying paying your dues in one way, not literally, but also then paying for like life and kids and family. Like every person we just mentioned was not focused on growing or having or extending a family. And then you, very different approach, very different position in life that you were, you started out with. I mean, is that a fair way to put it? I mean, you were a family man. That's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah,
nobody else
absolutely.
Was.
Right. And it was always a challenge, trying to balance time, through family and everything. Whenever I first started out in the early, not a whole lot. They really stepped up to the plate whenever I was gone and made sure that the kids had what they needed and everything. Whenever I ran back into my wife in 2010, we got married, or maybe it was 2011, and they got married in 2012. She's been my biggest supporter. She's been the one that keeps pushing me, and y'all seen her out there on coverage. Mm-hmm. Y'all seen her out there on the bag and keeping me level headed and everything out on the course. It has been really hard to, and without their support, without their push, like I never would be what I am now. But that's not even including my brothers, mm-hmm. My brothers are 100% behind everything that I've done. It's just, having that family support coming from a big family, we knew what it was going to take for me to achieve my goals.
Yeah,
and everybody was on board.
And again, some of the people you're mentioning, you think of Kale, who now is starting his family or has just a few months ago. Dave, whose son is 3 or 4 years old. Again, all these years later, a lot of those guys are at that position in life, and you were fully immersed in it, already coming into the scene. It's just got to make it that much more difficult, like you said, adjusting your time and figuring out when you're coming and going. Now, when you looked at touring for that reason, and maybe even this conversation happened with Prodigy too, but when you started initially thinking about touring, what were some of those limitations? What were, did you ever want to go, or could you go for a month or two or three at a time? What were those conversations like?
Yeah, they were the tough ones. Mm-hmm. I tried to do a couple of weeks out and then bounce back home, because, with my kids and the way they were growing, man, you miss so much, within just a couple of weeks, so mm-hmm. I've never really stayed out on the road. I've stayed kind of regional. I've went to, some tournaments and then bounced back home. But my wife always tells me to go, she always tries to push me to be where I can be to make the best of the career, so having her support, having my mom and dad support throughout all of it, without them, I wouldn't be able to play as much as I have. There were limitations. I wasn't able to go full time, touring, leave in February and come back in October after the U.S. That would have been ideal, but I've never really had the funds to put an RV together and just say, hey, I'm taking the whole family, we're going, I've been the more 12, 14 hours away from home, bounce back home, at most, and then, the Maple Hill tournament was the first time I'd ever went over that limit. And it paid off. It really did. So, and then it went more and more into, just going to the big events and making it to where I can go out and bounce back and forth. So,
well, it's been awesome seeing you. You're always, provide one of the biggest smiles out on the course. Anytime someone sees you or just catches a glimpse of you from just about any distance, you're going to have a big smile and a warm hug. We've always appreciated that. when you, you know, think about what you've been doing the, these last couple of years, bouncing around, playing these tournaments, you've also then had a new threshold. I'll say it, you're getting a little older. You're not as old as me and Johnny, but a new threshold. What has that been like juggling or thinking about MPO, MP40? What factors into those decisions of where you want to go compete?
Well, you know, my first year in MP40, I just kind of wanted to play the majors and, you know, see how I could put myself in position there. Until probably about 4 or 5 months into the season, Ray Hill had told me about, you know, man, you're kind of up there in the points championship, you know? And I was like, well, you know, I didn't realize that, you know, that was a thing that they rewarded for all of that. So, whenever he told me that, it kind of made me open my eyes to like, man, maybe I should push for this. This is something to be really cool. And if you, well, on the other side, if you look up here in the background, that's the trophy, the 2021, points champion. So, or maybe it was 2022. Yeah, the 22. Okay. Yep. So, but yeah, I won the points championship. I chased it down. And then, last season I got started off slow. My wife had back surgery in early in the year. So I didn't travel at all for the first few months of the year, to stay at home and take care of the home front, you know, mm-hmm. and make sure that everything was in place. So, but I still wound up second in points, last year as well, with a abbreviated season. But yeah, that for me now is the choice that, it's more lucrative for me to play in the Masters because I can play and finish, you know, in fifth, sixth, or seventh in Open and not make as much money as what the winner of Masters got. And it kind of got to me a couple of times. I was like, man, that was probably the wrong business decision, you know? Like, you know, I got a mouse to feed. So that's kind of how it, you know, it's like, so, but yeah, with being in the Masters, you know, I'm not quite looking at it as the ATM, just going and checking cash and checks, you know, but I also think that that's the best for me as far as that goes.
I would say so, because I'm looking at your MP40 record, and as far as I can tell, we'll say other than the, I think a putting contest, which is the XC, you've cashed at every single sanctioned MP40 event you've ever played. You have not missed cash at an event.
Climo calls that the reindeer games.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. I was going to say, we don't even count that. No, the putting at Worlds.
I mean, and it's yeah, there, sure. But yeah, you're correct. We don't count it. And last year, you cashed and won one, two, three, four, five MPO events. And you obviously cashed in all of the MPO events last year, but you also cashed in every MP40 event other than the skill shot at Masters Worlds last year.
Another reindeer game.
So I would say you, financially, you're making some good decisions.
Yeah. Like I said, it's been definitely better. It's been two of the best years of my career, you know, moving into the Masters. You know, I didn't pick up the game until I was 24 years old or something like that, 22, 24, you know, and by the time I had ran into Eric Rodehouse and those guys that kind of took me underneath their wing, you know, I didn't realize that, you know, you could make money at the sport, you know, until they showed me. And then, you know, after they took me in and showed me the ropes, that's whenever I started really getting the competitive edge of playing, you know. I've always been competitive too, you know, and always wanted to be the best I could be in anything that I did. So, but yeah, I mean, I have other things that, you know, I still do, you know, I played, last year, I played four travel softball tournaments. I played in, my first ever major cornhole event. They have one of their major championships. And to explain that, like, I kind of got fifth place in rec is kind of how that worked out. So they do a round robin. They do round robin and they seed you, you know, they have their top tier, which is their professionals. And then they have their second tier advanced, you know, and so on. So I was in tier three and got fifth place. So, that was pretty interesting. And then, on top of that, I play APA pool.
Damn.
So, which is an amateur amateur pool association. And I played into the regional event there and lost in the final table.
Have you played pool against any of the other disc golfers that say they're very good? Simon and Paul Ulibar. Have you played against them, and how have you done?
He's whooped them.
I haven't got a chance to play with Yuli. I have played with Simon actually a few times when we were out on the road. That was one of our things that we just kind of met up to do. You know, he likes to have one of those German beers from time to time and and shoot some balls around. So, yeah, I got to play with Simon. We're pretty close. Mm. Like we can I think he wound up winning the majority of the games, but he could tell I had game. You know, so.
Nice. Now, with all that being said, I got to ask, if somehow disc golf didn't remain like your most fruitful, lucrative path forward, if somehow disc golf just wasn't an option anymore, what would be the, out of all those, or maybe a new one, what would be the thing you would then like most invest your time and energy and effort into? Like, what one would you be like, okay, now this one I'm going to take really serious to turn into possibly a career?
Right. I would have to say cornhole probably.
Okay.
The repetitiveness of it, the, you know, movements are a lot like the putt. As y'all know, I like the putt. So, I think that cornhole could be a backup plan. I think I'm already past the, the curve of the pool playing. I don't think I would ever be able to be, you know, the professional pool. I don't know if the eyesight's getting worse as the older I get, or if it's, you know, what the case may be, but, I do well though.
Why do I have this sneaking suspicion you're like a 200 average in bowling too? Is there any? I'm just making this up, but is there any chance that's true?
You're actually not making it up. I started bowling. Me and my wife did on a couples league, okay. And at first I used a house ball and bowled straight, and my average was like 105.
Mm-hmm. And then that's what I'm talking about.
And then I realized that you had to get a bowling ball and that you had to learn how to hit your spot. And by the time it was all said and done, I was probably 207 average, I think is what it was.
Damn. All
so right. it was, but anything hand-eye coordination, I've always been real good at. I've always been able to pick it up. And, you know, I'm decent at darts. I'm decent at pool. I'm decent at cornhole. I'm decent, you know. I can shoot a basketball well. I'm not the best shooter, but I played in my days. I used to play football, track and field, shot put and disc. I've done a lot of athletic. I've always been athletic in everything that I've done for the most part.
Wow. All right. Well, now I think about the dabbling, the MP40, the business decisions of, you know, where you're going to make the most and what's going to feel the most fulfilling. Is there any, is there any MPO title that you're like, damn it, I still am going to go play MPO at this event because I want that championship title? Is there any that have eluded you?
The only one that I could really, I think break down to make sense to go chase would be the USDGC. I felt like that course always, it favored me because you have to place the disc, and I was really good at placing it in the fairways. My best finish there, I think, was 19th or 21st or something. And I felt like that if there was one that I could get, that would probably have been the one. With Worlds the way it is now, it would be hard for me to go one of those stretched out courses and kind of win a world championship through that. But any kind of a major title, really, I mean, even in the MP40, I'm chasing those MP40 majors. Hopefully one day I'll break through and get one of those. With Worlds being in Kansas this year, it's going to be a little tough because, you know, you got your Kells and Philos and guys that are throwing the disc still real well, Feldberg, that are getting them out there, you know. I'm not taking anything away from my game. You know I can throw the disc as well, you know, but being that extra 70, 80 feet closer to the basket can make a big difference.
Yeah, most certainly. And then I, you know, everyone likes to say, well, when I get to Masters, I'm going to dominate. Because, well, no, all the good people that were, you know, that were good when they were 30 or 35, if they're about the same age, they're still good at 40 or 41. And was there any, well, first of all, did you have any of that? Like, I'm the young guy, I'm the fresh young blood on the block coming into the scene. You know, I'm going to be wiping up all these Masters. Did you have any of that thought at first?
I did, you know, just because I knew that I felt like that, you know, if I would have found the game younger, I would have been able to compete with, you know, the Felbergs, the Jenkins, the Climos, the Schultz, you know, even the Pauls and the Rickies, you know, whenever they came about, like, you know, I still felt like if I would have got it at their age, I could have been there, you know, I could have, I felt that I had it, what it took. But I realized real quick that, you know, the game is 90% half mental and, you know, you get in your head and you tell yourself, well, this is a cakewalk. You know, it's not a cakewalk whenever you're standing on hole one and your name's getting called.
And you've been there. What I love, I mean, your PDGA number is what? 31473. So you've been there and watched so much of the growth of our game. Just the fact that when you got, you know, the A tier and coming onto the scene, or the national tour at the time, coming onto the scene, live coverage was just starting. Post-production coverage hadn't even hit its stride yet. Seeing tournaments and thinking, oh my God, $1,250, what a huge payout, to today, you're like, oh man, if I get in the top 20, I'm making maybe $1,250. You know, in 20th place. Like, you've been there and experienced all of those different things. What is most exciting to you moving forward? And regardless of division, what excites you the most?
I'm really excited that, you know, it seems like more and more money is getting into the Masters, the Masters area, you know. I mean, do I think we'll ever be in the, you know, $30,000 paychecks like the Open for the championships? I don't know. Maybe not in my time, but maybe whenever, you know, Paul Ricci and Isaac and Gannon and those kids get up there to you know, my age, they might still be able to play for that kind of money. Mm-hmm. You know, I do feel that, you know, if I was in this career starting now, whenever the pays like it is, I mean, I could have made a really, really decent living at, at throwing frisbee to where, I mean, I'm doing okay. I'm getting by, you know. I don't live in no big house, and I don't have $100,000 car sitting out front or nothing. You know, my Toyota Camry's Gary run it over 300,000, and I've been in it for 7 years now. So, but, yeah, I think that the money could, I mean, going forward in the Masters, I think that it could be good for us.
Yeah. There's always going to be a generation that's just missing it. Right. Like,
yeah.
Like, you know, by the time, tough. You know, yeah. When Dutch is 55 and he's looking at those 40-year-olds and they're making, you know, those winners are pulling in 10, 15 grand an event, you're gonna be like, oh man, well, when it gets to Grandmasters, that's my time. Yeah. Trust me. Absolutely. We all know I'm sure Climo feels the same way, right?
Yeah. There has to be, you know, especially as you've dabbled in so many other sports, or you're active in so many other sports, there has to still be maybe some gratification, some excitement in the fact that, like, you were here and have been here and continue to be here in the early days of disc golf's explosion. Like, you got to experience. Now, you may not be getting that bag, so to speak, and getting the huge payouts.
Well, we don't know yet. He hasn't announced it.
I'm just saying, you've got this experience, which doesn't pay all the bills, but you've got this experience. Well, that's got to say something, right? Like, you could say to your kid, you know, back in my day, kids, we didn't make six figures at a tournament.
Right. Yeah. I really do believe that I've had a good career. You know, I've got over, you know, I mean, my accolades really show that, you know, that I've done well in what I've done, and I've been successful, and, you know, I'm proud of the accomplishments that I have done.
Yeah.
You know, I've gotten, many of wins underneath the Prodigy belt. I know that they if it wasn't for them, you know, a lot of the tournaments and stuff that I won that I wouldn't have even been at, maybe. Sure. You know, I might have been at home having to work full time and not be able to work part time and still jump out and go play the tour. Wow. You know, so, you know, thankful to them for everything that they did, for sure.
All right. Well, with that being said, also just to tack on to what you said, PDGA wise, it shows you've played 405 events. You have 88 wins, which is just some quick math tells me that's just shy of winning 25% of the tournaments you've entered. And that even includes, you know, some amateur events and whatnot. And it's incredible to see those kinds of numbers. Obviously, like you said, creeping on that 100 win mark, which is a very small company of people that have gotten to that milestone. So it's incredible. And then in the 2023 season, even only when you're just dabbling, you were still sixth in the global masters ranking. So incredible to see. And for the second week in a row, we have the pleasure of setting you up for what is a Smashbox exclusive and you telling us for 2024, who is Dutch Napier, Batman's disc golf manufacturing sponsor.
That'd be the reason I have this guy on.
Ah. Oh, going to Lone Star Disc.
I'm making you sweat it out all this time. I feel bad now.
He's sitting in front of a fireplace with a coat on.
He's like, God, I'm sweating here. All that because you were hiding. Yes. That is awesome. Congratulations. Tell us about it.
Appreciate it. Yeah, I'm excited. I have a fella named Sam Coakley. He's been agenting for me, and he's been going out and getting sponsors for me. And he worked out a deal with Lone Star that was well above what Prodigy was willing to do for me. So, you know, after 9 years, I kind of expected them to kind of step it back to the good side and continue. But, you know, their uncontinued support would be thankful to be able to move forward. And now I get to learn new disc. I'm excited. It's been a long time since I've been excited about going out and throwing the disc and finding out what they do, you know, cause I've been throwing the same bag for so long. You know, I might even still have disc in my bag that you filmed at Maple Hill that 2000. Like, but I'm just excited. There's a lot of good things going on. I have some other sponsors as well that are going to help out. And you know, with Prodigy, it was a Carry Prodigy bag. You know, wear our clothing and mm-hmm. everything. So with that, I get to branch out and do some other things as well. So. I'm super excited about that.
Excellent. Well, you know, we've seen obviously Lone Star just come into the scene in the last couple of years. We've seen a very aggressive approach in terms of their sponsorship. They picked up a bunch of superstars that we saw beginning of the 2023 season. And then we saw them make a few more shifts and adjustments. A few people left the team and a few people got added to the team. And so I feel like that is, I'll say, business as usual. And I think I feel like from an outsider perspective, it feels like they're trying to find their own as to where they're going to align, who they're going to align with, and then they're continuing to develop all these new products. Were you surprised maybe about Prodigy and being with them for so long? Because you weren't necessarily actively looking for new sponsorship. Were you surprised that Prodigy maybe didn't come to the table with what you expected after such a long tenure?
Yeah, I mean, I thought I was going to be a lifer. You know, I mean, you hear people say it all the time, but, you know, I really do believe that I was going to be throwing Prodigy discs for the rest of my career. I don't know how much of a career I have left. You know, I'm getting older and stuff starts to hurt. And, you know, you wake up each day and you rode over the bed wrong and now you hurt. So, you know, I didn't know how much more time in my career I had. And I was kind of surprised that they wouldn't keep pushing forward with me and moving through through the sponsorship. And I'm also excited about opening new doors. I've got to meet a bunch of new people already. I did make a trip down to the factory last week. Took my son down with me, and he did a little bit of some videoing and stuff for me. So you'll see some new content coming out soon, I'm sure. Meeting the guys at the factory, man, all of them are great. Travis and Terry was awesome to meet. Sheldon and Nick working in the warehouse and taking care of Sinjin, doing all the media stuff and everything, and Brittany and Debbie, like, they're great people down there. So
good. Now, what are some of the things? First of all, I love to hear you say how you're excited. That's a theme with a lot of players that get a new bag, and now you have this newfound excitement, and you have to learn the new discs. What are some of the things that, you talked about opportunities. Can you share with us what's exclusive to Lone Star, where you have to, I'll say fall in line or perform, where your alignments are, other sponsorships, things like that. Like, where's your flexibility and what are some of the things you're looking to do?
They're letting me go with any other kind of sponsor I want. And, look, I dropped
a tripod.
I bumped the table. Let me get you set back up.
Love it.
How's that work?
Okay, so, perfect. All right.
Squatch bag.
I get to carry the squatch bag for the first time, man. Okay. I never put wings on Terry. They're great.
Okay.
They feel awesome on the back.
I got one right behind the skirt here.
There's a Crush Disc Golf. This is going to be my new disc store sponsor out of Evansville, Indiana.
Okay.
It's always about growing the sport and getting more people involved. CLC Sportswear. They're involved with cornhole. They're involved with softball. They do jerseys and everything. And they're looking to do my jerseys for me this year. So I also have that going on. And then, of course, Sam Coakley, who's doing my agent stuff, is also doing my tie-dye and Sick Custom Dyes.
Oh, wow. So, that looks nice.
He already sent me a few. And Terry, I got one of these laying around everywhere.
I love it. Nice.
I don't know if am I allowed to show this?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. We do whatever we want here. nice.
We're
all
playing
right.
A game of whack fuck out here. That's right. So, Sam Coakley, Sick Custom Dyes. He's really took real kind of me, man, and he's really taking care of me. He's really, really looked at my best interest. He's not asked for a thing out of me. He has been agenting for me for the kindness of his heart. Wow. He's reached out to a bunch of different companies trying to get a hold of them to see if they would be willing to sponsor me or willing to, make the move forward and go. So, it's really awesome of him to take the time out of his day. He works a full-time job. He dyes discs for the other half of the time, I really appreciate all the time and efforts that he's put in for me. So, but yeah, Sick Custom Dyes, man, he's a great guy. If you ever need anything done up, he's got you.
Yeah, that's amazing, because I don't think I've ever seen a Lone Star dyed disc. I've seen a lot of dyed discs, and I've seen a lot of Lone Star discs, but I don't know if I've ever seen a Lone Star dyed disc, which is funny. I was just thinking that the combination has never hit me. So that's amazing. That's what and they looked so good. They were very vibrant.
Yeah, and
That plastic takes real well. It's like I said too, it's just awesome that he already had them to me before I even went to the factory. The guys at the factory were seeing them and were super stoked too already. He's already got dyes in his bag. So, but yeah, Sam got them out to me right away since he knew that I was going to Lone Star.
Now, with that, just to make a full clarification, obviously Lone Star came into the market with a ton of molds. Sometimes when a newer company comes in, they don't have a full requirement of exclusively throwing their molds. What are your obligations? Where is your kind of your agreement with what you're going to be doing?
Yeah, you know as well as I do, Terry, the loyalty, man. Like, I'm loyal. If I give you my word, it's my word. But the loyalty of it, I feel like I'm throwing 100% Lone Star no matter what, if they gave me the option to throw other stuff or not. You know, I've always been a loyal guy as far as that goes. You know, I mean, having that as a, I guess, as a person, like, I don't know, I wouldn't say personality, but as a,
it's a great trait, it's a personality trait. Yeah, yeah, sure. Mm-hmm. And certainly personal value and a very respectable one at that. And then some. So, yeah. Okay. So fully committed. In terms of exclusively throwing Lone Star, I got to ask, is there any just one or two or even three molds that have jumped out at you so far as like, yeah, these are a couple of givens that are going right into the bag?
Yeah, the Texas Ranger, it's kind of just your straight mid-range, you know, what you look for whenever you're trying to go into tight woods, you know, Kentucky golf. Mm-hmm. And then the Brazos is a overstable fairway, and the penny putter feels great. So I've been using it to putt with. So the penny putter will be my go-to putter. And unless it starts to act different in the winds or anything like that, but they have a good backbone to it, I guess, as far as the Benny, which is, just has a small bead on it, but it has the same, like just a little bit more stability and should fight the wind a little bit better if it gets too bad.
Okay. And now,
so, but yeah, the bayonet, is the distance driver that I'll be throwing.
Okay. With that, is there any other, so you're obviously your discs all exclusively Lone Star. You get mentioned a couple of the other sponsors. Is there any other sponsorship you're still open to? I mean, a hat sponsor, which I know you've once had, or a outerwear, umbrella, whatever. It was like, is there any other sponsorship? If somebody's watching and thinking, yeah, I'd like to get on board and support Dutch and partner up with them. Is there any other needs outside of a gas station gift card, because everybody wants those for the gas. But is there any other needs you're looking to have fulfilled?
I don't know if you know, but you see the Batman. My wife has been buying these things for me for years, bro, and I got probably 75 different Batman hats. I mean, I got one for – I mean, I could probably wear the same one for 3 months, you know, or different ones for 3 months. So, I'm open to anything, you know, and, Sam Coakley, like I said, he's been working out all my deals. You know, I've reached out to other companies, as well, you know, the hand drying, well sack, or maybe, you know, I mean, a disc retriever or, you know, that's the thing with having Lone Star, you know, they don't make all these different things to where Prodigy did. So like with Prodigy, it was like, okay, well, you use a Prodigy retriever,
sure,
or you use, you know, the chalk bags, or you, mm-hmm, you know, so with this, it's kind of a blessing in disguise because I get to meet and be on so many more different levels, you know?
Okay.
So,
okay.
But yeah, I mean, I'm open to anything, as far as, any more help, you know, I got room on my jersey to put anybody down, you know. I was talking to somebody about how NASCAR does it, you know. NASCAR does your big sponsor on the hood, mm-hmm, you know, and then your littler sponsors goes on the fender well, and then there's littler sponsors that are underneath the car that you don't even see. So I mean, I got armpit room all over, you know, like, I mean, I'm just saying. I mean, we can work something out.
Yeah, plenty of real estate.
I don't think I want to know where your hood is.
Yeah. Yeah, that's cute. In all of its glory, I do feel like this is appropriate to ask, and it was asked on the board. Can the world see your smashbacks? Smashbox tattoo.
No,
that's in an appropriate spot. I've seen it, but
it is an appropriate spot. Let me see if I can make it work. I don't know. I'm kind of pinched up over in this corner here. So tell me if,
there it is.
Up a little, just up a little.
There it is. Right below the Mace Man tattoo.
On those ripped calves.
Oh, right, those are some nice calves.
Dang. You've been tossing some bags around. There it is, folks. Yes. Yeah, as far as we know, you're the only person. Like, Johnny and I don't even have Smashbox tattoos.
I don't
tattoos.
Have any tattoos, either but do if I did, I might get a Smashbox one.
But you're the only person we know of on the planet that has one. Thank you.
Yeah, and I'd get it. I would get it again. I got that thing not long after the Maple Hill thing, just because you know, I felt that that was a big milestone in my career, is being on live coverage. You know, that was huge to me. You know, and so I felt like it needed to be done.
Well, it's
I'm gonna smash you for life, Terry.
Dude, we appreciate that it, 100%. So much. Yeah, you're more dedicated to the brand than we've been. So.
That's the loyalty. Like I said, you see my loyalty all the time, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It's funny to think where we've all come from and how that was just 10 years ago, and what disc golf was like and what sponsorships were like. And now here we are, you know, in multiple phases later on so many different levels in so many different regards of our sport. And, you know, us three aging gentlemen all still sitting around and enjoying disc golf the ways we are.
Love it.
Absolutely love it. Dutch, I just took a real quick look, and maybe you can expand on it before we let you go. If people want to see you throwing that brand new Lone Star plastic, tell us a little bit about what we should expect in 2024. Where might we see you out there battling?
Yeah, I'm going to be out playing on the Masters tournaments. I'm going to play on the Disc Golf Master Tour, playing, you know, quite a few of those events. The ones that make the most sense for me, mm-hmm. you know, and my family, for my, you know, my financials. Mm-hmm. I'm going to be playing at both the majors, the Tim Selinski's and the U.S. Major or the U.S. Masters Worlds.
Okay. Yep.
So I'll be playing in a bunch of the A tiers and all kinds of different regions. I'm going to be trying to chase them down. I start off in Florida for the Tallahassee Open in a couple of weeks. So we're going to try to get these discs tuned in and make sure I can score and get going. And then I'm going to do quite a few local events, man. I feel like I've stepped away from my local scene quite a bit. Mm-hmm. And I kind of want to get back to the roots and kind of take over the area again. And, make sure that, you know, Lone Star understands that they didn't just buy Dutch Napier, they bought the region, you know. I got a region that'll stay behind me, you know, through and through. So, you know, all the people that were behind me throwing with the star on, I'm just going to a new star. So exactly. Hopefully they'll understand and they'll, you know, make the transition with me.
That's an awesome attitude.
Yeah, exactly. And we know that, you know, people love brands, but they are certainly endeared and pulled in by the person, the human, the loyalist, whatever the case might be. And of course, Lone Star getting an incredible representative in yourself. So I got to say, you know, thank you. Like you said, the loyalty, the way I've seen you out there grinding and pushing and playing and going through these stages of your career has been inspiring to myself and to a lot of other people. And to have you think of us and have conversations with us and exclusively announcing new sponsorship here with us tonight is certainly means a lot to us as well. Is there anything else you'd like to say to any of the world out there before we let you go here tonight?
Yeah, man, I just want to say thanks to my wife, Nikki. She's been, like I said, supportive of me for my career. My mom and dad, I love you. Thank you for everything. All my kids, Zachary, Brighton, Caitlin, Tiana, and DJ, like, thank you all. And then my brothers for pushing me to be the meanest and best I can. That's what they've done, you know, so.
Brothers
I just try to keep pushing on and you know, hopefully they're proud of me. That's my main goal. If those people are proud of me, Terry, I'll keep doing it until the day I die.
Well, they'd be silly and crazy to not be proud of you. It's been an incredible journey to watch so far. We thank you for your time. We want everyone to go out and support you. What's the best way that they can support you in terms of you and your new Lone Star partnership? Is that discs specifically online or getting them right from you? What are some of the best ways they can support you, buddy?
As of right now, I'm going to be doing a tie dye release with my logo on them.
Okay.
They'll be all over my Facebook, I'm sure. And then I think we got it in the works where Lone Star is going to be selling some things for me on their website. So just keep an eye out on social medias and see what's popping and see what's coming out. I know Crush Disc Golf is going to have some stuff on their website too. I'm going to have some new jerseys coming out. So any of that you buy will help support and keep me out on tour. And that's just, that's what I got.
Wow. If that's what you got, that's what we're taking.
The Squatch bags, I'll have some discount codes on those as well. All that, like I said, just keep up with me on social media. We'll push it as much as I can and, make it as lucrative as I can. And, we'll keep pushing forward and keep getting to the tournament. So, and if they want to reach out to, any kind of a lesson or anything, whenever I'm in their town, if they see that I'm coming to their town, please reach out. You know, I love teaching. I love coaching. I've coached a lot of the pros. I've coached AMs. I've coached beginners. So, you know, anybody that's looking to better their game, I'm coaching a guy in Hawaii right now that I've never had a chance to, even do a hands on hand, lesson with that. He's already seen improvements in his game. So, just reach out.
Well, damn, this guy does it all. You probably got to go protect Gotham or something yet tonight here, with all the work you're doing. Dutch, we wish you the best. Looking forward to seeing you out there more in 2024. Congratulations on Lone Star and all of your new partnerships and alignments. That everyone's getting a damn good representative in yourself. And thanks for joining us tonight. Have a good one, pal.
Yeah, you too, Terry. Thank you so much. Thanks, Johnny.
Of course. Thanks, Dutch.
Take care. Good night.
A phenomenal human being in Dutch. Yeah. Like, it's just, you can't say enough good things about that guy. And he's right. Like, just his enthusiasm, his support, and everything has always been... I can't wait to see the Dutch Napier jersey.
Yeah, it's going to be... it's going to be colorful and exciting because when you're teaming up with some of those, full dye sublimation companies that can just literally put everything on your jersey, and the fact that they, work within the bags community, and
maybe he could be one of our softball. First big cross athletes, Bo Jackson. We got a Dutch Napier. He does disc golf and bags.
I'm all about it. All right. Again, thank you yet again to Batman Dutch Napier for joining us. In just a moment, we're being held up by me for a moment. I am going to send over a special code to another representative, someone else who has managed to find himself in a new sponsorship spot. And, of course, we're talking about Gannon Burr, another one of the highly anticipated and talked about movements since making a note a few months ago or a few weeks ago about leaving his sponsor in Prodigy. And now we found where he landed.
Yeah, we did. We also found out today, I don't know if to say the poor guy, Alden Harris today announced that he was going to Discmania. As well, just a little overshadowed.
Yeah, it's a hot time.
It's hard. It's hard to balance the announcements because Alden announced and Eagle announced very close to the same time, and clearly with Eagle being as big as he is, it kind of overshadowed Alden's announcement a little bit, but it's an important announcement because Alden is one of the one of our brightest young faces on tour, and he's one of the people that's putting himself out there more than anybody. So just that signing alone today, I think, is going to have some really big ripples that maybe a lot of people might be overlooking at this point.
Yeah, it's easy to not necessarily understand the full impact of all the things that he can do on the course and off the course. And I think yet another really bright and incredible pickup over there by the guys at Discmania. And one of the guys that's going to be featured in some of that Alden content,
maybe,
and or maybe not. Maybe their friendship will end. I don't know. I'm sure they're going to keep us guessing. But none other than one Gannon Burr joining us on the show. Gannon, congratulations! How you doing?
I'm so excited. It's so awesome to have. I mean, new discs, my friends on the team. It's kind of the dream situation.
You, like both of our previous two guests, have to be getting inundated and having these conversations. What's been the most repetitive? I'll ask it then as well. What's been like the most repetitive thing that you've been addressing or talking about that you want to put out there with this new sponsorship?
Oh, gosh. I don't even know. I mean, there's so many things that are awesome. I mean, from the new discs I'm going to be playing with, like, on the disc golf side of it, you know, I'm going to have a lot of fairway driver selection now and some really good distance drivers as well, where I'll have a bunch of slots opened up in my bag. I feel like I've never, you know, at Prodigy, I feel like I had two usable fairway drivers. Mm. And now at Discmania, I think, I mean, I'm having a very hard time deciding because there's like 10 molds that or 10 different ones that I could bag and make them all work. But, you know, I usually only carry like 18 to 20 discs. And so I can't bag them all. So that's kind of a little bit of a frustrating part, I guess. But you know, I've already noticed the drivers going just a little bit further, holding lines a little bit better. And so that's nice to have. I think my forehand will definitely increase distance just purely based off the discs I have now. And so that'll be helpful on tour for sure. But in terms of just like other stuff, I mean, my agreement, we're going to be having some, obviously Gannon Burr discs coming soon. And so that's okay. Really exciting. It'll be my first ever, you know, disc that I help kind of co-design in a way. And, that way I can kind of share with the people what I am looking for in a disc. And then obviously got my friends, Alden and Gavin and Kyle on the team. And so it's going to be a pretty fun year. And I think it's going to be a very successful year. Hopefully that we can, I guess, you know, we're the young guns. And so we might not have as much of a presence on social media yet as the Simons, the Eagles and of the world, but I think we can definitely work our way up there and with our play as well. You know, obviously me and Kyle both have a US championship. Alden is top 15 in the world and Gavin's been improving every single year he's been on tour. And so he's only been going up and I think it's just going to be a very, very fun-filled year. You know, I'm staying in Airbnbs with Alden, Gavin, and Isaac, and so to have majority Discmania in the house it'll be fun to kind of talk discs again. You know, probably steal each other's discs and stuff, but it'll be a very fun year.
So the disc that you're talking about making with Discmania, are we talking putter, mid-range, fairway, distance? Like what? What are you looking for? What would you love to be your first type of disc?
We're actually kind of still deciding on what, I guess I'm going to be making and what I want the idea of the disc to be. But the goal is obviously, you know, I'm known for my putting. So the goal is to have a putter eventually. And so, you know, we're going to hopefully be working on that real soon and get that released as soon as we can. You know, kind of maybe I'm between like overstable approach disc or like good straight to overstable mid range. Those are my two. I'm kind of debating about. Obviously, I said all the. I mean, Discmania has so many fairway drivers. There'd be no need to make another one of those. And the distance drivers are really good. Unless I think of something else, those are probably my main two or three discs.
What when you think about a perfect putter or the components of a perfect putter, like what is in that recipe? What are those ingredients that you're going to put together to come out with a putter that you absolutely love? What are some of the components and parts of that?
So obviously, have it be a putting putter is going to be the main thing. And so for me, I need to have a bead on the bottom of the disc and also have. I mean, it's going to be made in different flexes, so if people want to get a soft version of it, they probably can, but I will specifically be putting with a stiffer one. I like my putters as stiff as I can get them, because when it gets hot outside, I don't want it, like, bending in my hand at all.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, and I like how hard putters beat up too. They once they beat up for a couple weeks, they get this like really tacky, kind of chalky feeling, which I like. And so, you know, and Disvania has been so awesome to work with because of like all the technology they have. I mean, they can make custom runs. They can make an entire run. You know, they can modify it to be like, oh, you know, we'll make this run of this more overstable. And so they can do that stuff. They have these, you know, new technologies coming out in the future. And there's just a lot of cool stuff on the way. But back to the putter. Yeah, definitely a beaded putter. I want it to be a good throwing putter too. And so that kind of has to do with the stability. It needs to be low glide and overstable. That way for my putt, I can be in circle one and I kind of just treat it as a, like a beanbag toss, basically. That's what I tell myself, is because just go up and down, take the glide out of play, and you won't miss as much usually. It's good for circle two because you can run at full speed and not go too far past. But yeah, and even like have it be a good forehand approach putter. And so the way like the inside of the rim will be shaped can also affect that. So we'll get it dialed in, I'm sure.
Okay. Now, part of the, clearly it's a very busy weekend that led into today as well. What do you make of the, I don't want to call it chaos, but what do you make of the excitement when we see where Eagle McMahon announces officially and where he goes, Eagle leaving Discmania, and then with a whole rush of excitement, you pulling into Discmania? What do you just kind of make of like the state of our game, in the sense that like two of our top players on the planet, you and Eagle, swapping sponsors, where you're going to where he once was and he's going somewhere entirely different? What do you make of all that?
It's interesting. I mean, like we all kind of like run the course, I guess. I mean, there's kind of like that people call it like whatever year rule, like the 10-year rule, like you can't get to 10 years with the same company because whatever, you know. Mm-hmm. So, you know, obviously me and Eagle have been at our old sponsors for a long time. I think I was 7 and he was like 9 years. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, well, I mean, one of the best ways in your career to like make a big splash in your popularity and just get people talking about you and a new brand change is just switching companies, because there's so many more outlets that you can have, and it's kind of a new hype. And, you know, that's definitely important for me. I was thinking like, I for sure, you know, definitely needed to make a change in a company because that hype's going to build up there. And, and landing at Discmania was pretty much my top option. And so it's, like I said, it's kind of the dream situation.
I've got two big questions. First of all, let's talk about the trolling. You fed into all of the conversations, it felt like. A lot of people were speculating and guessing and claiming they knew, and they were reading all the alleged clues and everything else. And then you'd come out and you'd show an Innova disc in front of an MVP basket or whatever it was. Like,
or go onto a collector's page.
Yeah,
and
ask about questions. Like, you fed into it. What was part of your thought process there? Were you just excited to troll everybody?
Yeah, well, because I mean, not many.
Or did you want to throw them off?
Yeah, well, yeah, I did. I mean, it's for some reason in disc golf, and or maybe it's this way everywhere else, but you know, the rumors are usually true when it comes to like players switching companies. And so obviously I had the rumor of me going to Discmania, and so if I could, like, I guess throw off people just a little bit, I definitely didn't throw off that many people, but I think it was kind of funny to do. You know, I kind of figured like I'm not gonna be able to do this for at least another 3 years, so I might as well do it right now, especially because I'm still, like, some people consider a kid, so like I can get away with it. But you know, they were fun to do because I got like hundreds of comments and sometimes thousands of interactions on the posts. Mm-hmm. And then like my Instagram story where I had like with the Innova disc and then the MVP basket, I called my dog over into the window, because that was the story was like, oh, my dog's watching me play disc golf. And I was like, hey, come over here. And then she went in the window, and then I propped up the disc and like kind of made it seem like I accidentally showed it, you know. I don't know. And And that, or like, hey, maybe that would have got people thinking I was going to like an open bag company. You never know. So it's like,
yeah,
I
all did, of those things
I did
were
see
said.
That, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So definitely were able to play into it.
And then like my leaving post, I like used 5 different taglines from companies, which was kind of fun.
Which drove it. I feel like the silliest part about that was the people that only heard one tagline and then they're like, well, that's it. It's like,
they're
no,
like, oh, he's going
he,
there.
He said 5 of them. It clearly was, he was trying to, again, like just some next level trolling. That was great. Now, maybe you could set a record straight. Could you confirm that last year when there was a discussion about you potentially leaving and there were some announcements even made and then things were kind of pulled back and then a lawsuit was pending and such, Discmania was in fact the front runner last year. Is that true?
I'm not going to answer at this time.
Okay. Fair enough.
I don't know if I should talk about it because with that whole legal situation stuff.
I mean, you're just a kid. Nobody can sue. Yeah. Okay, fair enough.
Is there some sort of minor rule or something?
No. So then I'll pivot over to kind of a similar but different question, which is being out of contract as of the end of 2023 and then having conversations, is it fair to say multiple companies were lobbing offers at you? Can you elaborate on conversations or companies that you talked to or things that led you to choose Discmania over someone else? Like, what, you're on the market, you're one of the the brightest superstars we have to assume everyone was coming after you.
I'm not gonna name any companies specifically, but it actually all started at USDGC. I talked to a company before the tournament and I got an offer that was pretty solid right then and there, and so it made the leveraging really easy because it wasn't, and I didn't use an agent for any of this.
Okay.
It was just myself and me asking my mom what she thought, stuff like that, and then she helped with more like the lawyer and attorney stuff on that side when they would eventually look over the contract. But I did pretty much all of the negotiation. I'm not scared to say what I want, what I want to have in an agreement, that way I can sign it and we can both be happy mutually. I got that offer pretty early in the off season and then had a couple more companies reach out to me and connect to me and got a couple more offers. And then it eventually got down to 2 companies that were kind of fighting over me. One of them being a really small company actually. And so there were some very interesting, ideas that were in the contract offer, with the smaller company. And so, it made the decision really tough, but then, overall this man came back, they definitely listened like what I had to say and what I wanted in a contract. And they, it showed me that they, respect me and they wanted to really make it work. And so I appreciated that. And, it's just a green flag whenever I can, I could text, Austin Montgomery right now and he could respond in about 5 seconds if I wanted to. So, getting responses on questions I had was like so quick. I mean, usually it was less than 5 minutes I get an answer back. And that was really, 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 really awesome because it made the process super quick. And, Austin Montgomery's an awesome guy. He made the negotiation process really easy because, he's like a friend to me and, the way we were able to talk back and forth, it didn't feel forced. It didn't feel even like too professional in a way. And so it was almost more productive because we felt more comfortable with each other. Everyone at the Discmania who works there is just so awesome. And like I said, Gavin and Alden on the team and Kyle, it's going to be so, so amazing.
Excellent. What's all in your contract? What does it consist of?
I can't like say too much. I mean, it's obviously a 3-year deal.
Just hold it up to the camera then. If you can't say anything, we'll read it.
Yeah.
Okay. Share with us, because that's what everybody wants, right? Everybody wants the deets. Like, give us the down and dirty. Share with us everything you can or are comfortable sharing then.
I'll just say what I look for in a contract is a good base salary and a good bonus structure.
Okay.
Those are my main 2 things. Also, I was able to get the Squatch bag deal. So that was another component that kind of added some more revenue for me as well. Mm-hmm. And not just that, but it also expands my brand through a different, you know, company. Mm-hmm. So that was really cool. And I'll have a signature bag out this year, hopefully pretty soon, with Squatch. But yeah, my deal is 3 years, and I will have a couple Ganon Bird discs that will be coming out. And obviously a tour series every year. You know, just like Kyle Klein's Midnight Prowl 1, 2, and then you guys know all of them. Yeah. So I'll have that same situation basically. I think that's pretty much all I can say. I mean, it's pretty typical contract. There's not too much more. I just can't disclose any of the, you know, real specific numbers or anything.
Well, I was just going to say, just do us a favor, since you can't talk about it, just blink if it's worth more than $1 million a year.
We'll wait here. Tell us.
I mean, you're going to blink at some point.
Well, I mean, it sounds like the common thread. We just had Dutch Napier on right before you, and he had talked about with him leaving Prodigy, opening up the opportunities for other sponsors. Because it sounded like with Prodigy, you were relatively locked into a lot of the different Prodigy products. So you now have a bag sponsor with Squatch. What else are you looking for? Like, or are you in talks with anybody else about other sort of sponsors, whether it's anything from a chalk bag or shoes or clothing? Yeah.
A lot of it's actually still getting worked out right now. I'm just kind of trying to figure out what I can and can't do. I guess I wasn't super prepared on that side, but I mean, we talked through it all. Everything's, I just need to like remember what happened. So I do have a chalk bag sponsor. It is Chump Chalk Bags. I know at least last year, Gavin uses them. Aaron Gossage uses them. Paul Uliberry uses them. And Gavin Rathbun kind of got me hooked on them a couple years ago. Mm. And, you know, the girl who makes them she sends a ton to me, and then I can, you know, give them away to people and kind of spread the chalk bag love. A lot of people, you know, started to use my tactic of checking the wind with a couple puffs. Mm-hmm. You know, you didn't really see that before me. And so it's kind of cool to see that happen and, kind of grow that brand as well. Cause obviously that's chalk's a big part for my mental health, I guess.
And your routine. Yeah. Your routine and mental health. Yeah. Yeah.
Funny, I don't use chalk ever in practice rounds. I don't even touch chalk. And then in tournaments, I'm like, well, if my grip's a little sticky and I grip it, well, that's stupid. I should use chalk. So I don't know.
It's like your safety blanket. It's like a safety blanket. Like, yeah, you know, your little comforter.
Uh-huh. I'm trying to find a way to get my I want to like play good, but also prove people wrong, I guess, in a way to where like I come out in the first event of the year. I'm just the fastest player on tour.
Oh, I'm like so ready for it. I'm ready.
Yeah.
Ready. Terry's now. Ready. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you know how Terry feels about slow play in general. He's one of our most...
Terry's not like slow players.
No, he's one of our more vocal...
He hates him personally.
Yes, that's right. Yes.
Yes, I hate you. I'll say it for the 100th time. If you take 29.9999 seconds on every throw, I'm not mad at you. I'm genuinely not.
If you take 30.0001, then I might murder you.
Yeah, exactly.
You may never find the body.
Whatever the rule is, that's where I'm a fan of the timing. And currently, it's still 30 seconds. And so that's why I'm a big fan of just as long as it's within the allowed time. And we could have another debate, you know, whole nother. It's not worth it. But that's just so everyone knows. I think a lot of people think I do have like personal feelings. I don't. It's anyone. And there's a lot of other people too that are also slow. You might lead the charge or lag behind. I don't know how you want to look at it, but there's a lot of people that exceed 30 seconds. You're not the only one.
And he's not, you're not even the worst case scenario these days.
Uh-oh.
My question is, how do you feel? Cause I definitely feel like, you know, there was one of the rounds of the Pro Tour Finals I played really fast, and I was on coverage. I think it was the third round, is the first round of the finals, or the finals of the two rounds. And I played really fast. Majority of my shots were within 10 seconds. Mm. And then I think I had one shot in the woods I took like 40 on, and then you gave me a bunch of crap for it.
Way to go, but jerk.
Hole 11. Hole 11.
If that's Paul McBath, if that's Ricky Wysocki, you're not saying a thing.
That's not no. Well, let me just, I'll put this out here, and it's a fair question. It really is. First of all, just so everyone knows, sometimes if we're not with a card in its entirety, we get cut into shots. So anyone, Paul or you or Ricky or whomever, sometimes when it gets shown on screen and it's in a replay, they may have trimmed off 20 seconds, or they may have come right to it. Like, I don't always know for sure how long it's been if we're not watching you in real time as it is. So I just want to put that out there, first and foremost. I'll give anyone a hard time. However, when you're habitual with it, when you are regularly at or exceeding the time, there's already kind of a little X on your back. And I think Nico obviously fell into that category at the European Open a couple years ago. Cupcake, who's also very infamous for it. Like, unfortunately, like, if your reputation is that you're slow,
even if the rest of that round was fast, the minute you're not, you forget about it.
But you're right. Like, I will give anyone, now, if anyone is slow and they're slow one time in 54 holes, I'm probably not ragging on them. Even if it's you, I'm like, I'm not ragging on anyone for that. It's if you're habitually slow and I capture it or see it. Yeah. I might use that as an
example, because I remember I had like a routine where I was like, okay, two pumps, putt, tee pad, throw immediately, shot, throw immediately, because I wasn't playing that great. I like barely made the next round of the Pro Tour Finals. I was like, I'm just gonna play really fast. See what Terry says.
And Terry let you down.
Make sure you text me next time that I'm giving you credit where credit is due.
I'm gonna have the live stream on while I'm playing.
Yes.
Yeah. Just listen.
You're multi-talented.
I mean, there's like a 12-second delay, so you'll putt and then listen and be like, "What did you just say about me?"
Yeah. There you go.
You know.
Exactly. Well, clearly, as you've got good spirits about it, clearly that's something you're well aware of. And, you know, I know you're always trying to improve. What I think is funny is sometimes when someone will say, I think Cupcake has said to me a few weeks ago, yeah, I'm really improved. And then I filmed them the next day. I'm like, no, I don't. You really haven't. Like, we could have baked cupcakes in the time you finally threw that putt. So
could have ate 10 cupcakes.
That'll be the new line, is like, how many cupcakes per round were there? So, and I'm getting to the point where I'm trimming everybody in a lot of post-production anyway. Like, whether he took 62 seconds or 12 seconds, like, I'll just make every single putt, you know, that 10 second mark or whatever it is, and I'll do that for everybody, because nobody really wants to watch that, no matter who you are. So at any rate, enough of that silliness. 2024, you know, you're young, you're hungry for seemingly every event. We see you at events and like defending a title or attempting to defend your title at the Memorial. I saw you signed up for Las Vegas Challenge. Like, those are a couple of events, if we're just putting it out there, that we're not going to see Paul or Ricky or an Eagle or a Simon at, right? Mm-hmm. Is that just young and youthful and ready to play as much as you can? Like, how do you factor when you do stuff on top of the full-time regular tour stuff?
I think it's like me and my friend group, like, we still just have fun playing disc golf. And so, if there's disc golf that weekend and we've already played those kind of courses, like, we might as well play. And it's like on the way. Memorial obviously is not on the way, but the goal is to, you know, obviously go from Florida, drive up. Our friend Silas Schultz lives in Baton Rouge, and you literally have to drive through Baton Rouge to get to Waco. And so we're just going to park our cars in Baton Rouge, take a nice, you know, 2.5-hour flight to Arizona, stay at Ricky's house, get a rental car with me, Alden, Isaac, and Gavin, and maybe Silas, and we'll get a rental car, stay at Ricky's house for free, basically, and then just, you know, take the rental car back, fly back out, and then we'll drive from Baton Rouge back to Waco. So it's basically like adding like a 5-hour car ride, round trip, basically.
So with all that being said, I just realized, you have to stay friends with Gavin. Like, he's the only one that could rent a car out of your whole group. Like, need him.
Actually, he's still, we're still kind of toast, because he's not 25. So
he's not even 25? I thought he was the oldest, and I thought he was at least 25. He's not?
No, he like just turned 24. And then I like, here's something that's surprising. I still don't believe it, but Alden's somehow older than Isaac.
Okay.
Because I think Alden's like 12 years old half the time, and then Isaac's the most mature person ever. So it's like
they don't line up. Is that what you're saying?
I had to just put that out there because it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, no, you need a 25 year old to rent a car. What's your plan?
It's well, to get a cheap rental car.
Okay, so you might have to
pay the insurance or something.
Put down a $300 deposit. Worse.
Yeah,
insurance is a lot worse apparently if you're not 25. So.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, either way, I'm excited that you're going to be out there. That's an event I planned.
If there's someone in Arizona that would like to chauffeur that's 25 years or older, reach out to Gannon and the crew.
Are you filming, Terry?
That is the plan. I'm trying to work on a few details and get some sponsorship to make sure that you know me and the whole crew. It pays off.
You're 25, right, Tara? Yeah. You can rent a car for these boys.
Yeah, Tara, you just drive us around.
What was your new contract? Maybe you could pay me enough. I don't know.
I mean, you could stay at Ricky's too. Yeah. You're there in anyway.
I don't know. Just saying. I'm renting the van and driving all these guys around. Yeah, that's a whole other story. Anyway, what else? Those two jumped out at me as I was looking at some registrations. Is there anything else that you guys are?
Vegas and Masters Cup is the same weekend as Vegas.
Okay.
Well, we didn't think it was. I don't even know how that happened. I don't know how we missed that either, but we're deciding between Masters Cup and Vegas, obviously.
Okay.
Masters Cup would be super fun to play for sure, just because it's such a legendary course. I've won there before. Alden. Mm-hmm. Almost won last year. You're by the beach. It's just kind of a good time. Where Las Vegas is like, I don't know, it's kind of bleh. It's just the desert.
Well, and you're also, yeah. Vegas is a little different for a 17 or 18 year old than it is.
Well,
for...
we don't fit in there good.
Sure.
Who knows? So we'll figure it out. Well, okay. I mean, it depends on what courses we're playing. I'm not sure what courses we're gonna play for Vegas. I'm not even sure how many rounds it is.
I think it's going to be two courses, and I think it's going to be four rounds. They're going to keep with the four round schedule. That's Mother's Day weekend. And I know there's some stuff in the works.
I wish Toronto would post the payouts before, like early on.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least like a general idea, because that would make a big difference. Because like Memorial last year had an insane payout.
Mm-hmm.
And that's like a big reason we're going, because there's another A tier that I don't think is going to pay as well.
Okay.
So one, it's Memorial's tons of fun. Ricky's there. Mm-hmm. It'll be just a good weekend, and the payout's really good. So,
yeah.
Yeah. I wonder, like, I like the idea, but I'm wondering if that would obviously help some events, but then as well as hurt other events that maybe they don't necessarily want to. That's interesting. But no, I mean, you're right.
And the fact that there's, you know, there could be some, you know, what happens when you post a projected payout? And then, dare I say, last minute, you know, the local realtor comes in and says, oh, I've got another $5,000 to add to the payout.
I don't think anyone cares if you're upping it.
I know, but that's what I'm saying is if you put it out there, and then maybe that keeps people away or doesn't entice people, and then all of a sudden it ends up being way more.
That's not so much what I would care about. I would be the one, you know, then I would rather see like the Vegas say, hey, potential or probable winner's payout is $18,000 or whatever that number is, and then, you know, work from there, or potential prize purse of $112,000. So
I will say, not that I'm a paid advocate of theirs by any means, but I know Vegas has been very, very adamant in saying, like, we want the event to be as good or better than it's been any other year. Like, we're not cutting any corners. Even though we're not a national tour or a pro tour stop or whatever, we're, you know, trying to make this as big. And it's their 25th anniversary, so I know that that is
that's true.
Part of what's going into the excitement. So anyway.
So I was going to say, we're talking about events. Your new sponsor, Discmania, always a big supporter or sponsor of the European Open. You plan on heading over to the European Open this year?
Yep. My first big adventure.
Yeah, the first time you've been over, because a bunch of your cohorts flew over there for Madrid, I believe it was, and even maybe for European Open as well, some of them did. But.
Yeah, they did. I can't. First of all, I can't believe Isaac and Alden went to Spain. Like, I don't know why.
I think it was like the worst.
Yeah. Alden hadn't missed cash the entire year. And then I don't even know how it's allowed, but they only paid out like 28% of the field.
Mm-hmm. Like, that's kind of high, actually, for an international event. 28%. Like, that's even semi-generous.
Wait. Oh, does it vary in like Europe?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, call up Big Germ. I think he whined himself into a payout in Thailand a few. Oh, shit, I said that out loud. No, a few years ago, Big Germ, they ran an event, one of the events in Thailand, and I don't know if they had 12 or 15 or 20 people. I don't know, but I think they literally were only going to pay out the top three spots. Germ, I believe, finished in fourth. And obviously, I think there was like probably even a cash streak and probably some ego, understandably, on the line of thinking you're not making cash at an international event. And I believe there was a slight adjustment to the payout. But international disc golf standards are completely different. Like, I'll use myself as a silly example. I played in Estonia right after Worlds. I finished seventh out of like 30-some masters. I didn't get paid. Like, I very much should have been in the cash line. By U.S. standards, that's just the way it's always been. Payouts are the structure is different. Usually, the amount that they pay in can be different. But you're making money over there, unless it's some really, really big event, isn't necessarily what you're doing when you're playing there. In a lot of European events, it's structured very differently. So, that's Alden, as you were saying, though, learned this the hard way.
Yep. Him and Calvin were the only players the entire year to not miss cash. And then Alden just misses cash. So we're going to play Krokol, which is the weekend before European Open, then European Open, and then the Estonia tournament. That's the next weekend. So we'll be over there for three events.
Do you feel more comfortable that all the other guys have been over there and that they can show you the way? Or are you nervous? Yeah. Or are you nervous that they're going to screw with you and be like, no, Gannon. Yeah. Like,
I go down that alley.
That symbol is definitely the men's room. Like that.
Or it's like, yeah, say this to somebody. And then it's just like a cuss word and they beat me up.
Suddenly you're part of a gang. Who knew? You know?
Who knew? That happens, you know?
Speaking of your friendship, and you know, I know we touched on Alden just as we were bringing you onto the show as well. But what were some of those conversations like for you and Alden, and I don't know, maybe the business sense or the friendship sense of, hey, let's both be on this, you know, sponsored by the same company. Kind of talk about some of the things you thought about or discussed.
I pretty much told every company that I was talking to that if you get me, you're going to get Alden too.
Okay.
We're basically a package deal. Yeah, I mean, well, we're going to tour together next year, so everyone's going to have their own car, except for I'm going to ride with Alden. So we'll definitely have some fun memories there. I even forgot the question.
What was like the idea between you and Alden? Were you guys thinking like, hey, yeah, let's make sure that we're for sure with the same company? Or, I mean, what if he just got a way better offer from some other company and it wasn't Discmania? Like, would that have been awkward?
I mean, I'll say like it was definitely like I was a little nervous there for a second that Discmania wasn't going to get Alden. Mm. Obviously ended up working out, and so everyone's happy. It's going to pay off for all parties. Alden brings a lot of value to a company. I think he's like top five for views on YouTube per video. Mm-hmm. I think he averaged 50,000 views per video, which is like, that's better than some of the post-production crews that are
most of
like,
them.
Yeah.
Most, I mean, what, except for Jomez is the only one that gets more, I think. And so, and we just do dumb videos. So it's like, that's going to be so fun. And then we're also all going to be doing clinics throughout the season on the off weeks and stuff. Okay. And even on some of the on weeks, with the boys. So we're going to be vending, it's gonna be a good media year for us. We have a lot of ideas. Like one idea I have is, you sit down on a so just during a practice round, you sit down, you pick a hole, And as players come through, you have a little, you know, you've seen a guy, maybe like the change my mind guy, and you have like a little prompt, and it's like a debate in disc golf. It could be like, this is a good hole, if it's like a controversial hole. And then you have someone sit down, a player sit down with you, and then you can get kind of the player's thoughts on stuff like that. And so I think, you know, with the clinics that Alden's YouTube, my YouTube is going to be I improved a lot. I got a new phone and a better camera on the phone. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'll be with Silas a good amount, and he's a really good editor. Obviously, Alden is too. And so I want to increase my YouTube. So, I mean, I think we're just going to have a good media year, which is the goal.
Yeah, no, I think, to echo that, we know that you could be a great golfer, and then you always want to be increasing that social media presence. So even if you're not a great golfer, you want to have a good social media presence. And even when you are a good golfer, having it is just icing on top of the cake. And that's pretty exciting to see because, like you said, Alden and Silas, two of our
more creative,
younger content creators. And then obviously you're going to be in on part of that as well in developing your own channel. So I like it. What, side note, do you have your license? Are you going to get it? What's going on?
So, I got it.
So Alden's just, he's full-time driver.
Yeah, that's part of the strategies. I don't get a license because I don't want to drive.
Wow.
I mean, you could sugarcoat it or maybe disguise this strategy a little, or I guess you could share it with everyone. Yeah, you're just
get my license, but it's kind of just been like we've just been busy. Haven't been thinking about it. We weren't thinking about it too much. I went to Florida for like 3 weeks. I just came back.
Uh-huh.
And then we got back here, and now we just hit -41 we have like 2 or 3 feet of snow consistent everywhere. Some spots are like 4 feet deep, and then I have an 8-foot pile outside of my house and my driveway. Like, it's just like there's like not good driving. I mean, the streets are just ice. Every single street terrible. Is like this thick of ice.
Yep.
And so, yeah. And then, I mean, well, like last time we checked, like all the there, like when I was supposed to be like doing like driver's ed, I was like all the appointments were full, and so I like couldn't even do that. And so all I have to do to get my license is just take a driver's test.
Okay.
I'm not sure what exactly like an actual like I'm driving the car. It's not just like a written test or anything. Because I passed the written test, so we're good there.
Okay, so you've passed the written test, and then you've got all your hours of practice driving in, or no? Have you?
I don't think you have to do that.
I think after you're 18, you don't have to do that.
Oh, after you're 18.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Because most people don't wait till they're 18.
That's crazy. Yeah, okay. And I say all this because my daughter's 15, and she currently is driving at pretty much every opportunity except for the last week when we had the same snowstorm you're talking about here in Wisconsin. And so we've backed off and we're easing into that. But yeah, she's got to get 40 daytime hours, and then I think 10 nighttime hours of driving in.
Like I said, I think once you turn 18, all that goes out the window, and you can literally just take the test and get that.
Okay. So. All right. Who's going to be like your closest thing to your instructor? Will that be Alden that is technically kind of like a trainer/instructor? I mean, you're spending the most time with him on the road.
And be honest, will you drive at all? Over the summer. You won't get behind the wheel. And be like, we're just gonna run to the gas station quick, and I'll drive.
No, I'm not sure. I think you have to be. Like, I think it's 25 again or something like that. That if I don't, I can drive. I just have to be with someone over 25.
Oh, okay.
Huh.
If you're not okay.
Yeah, and then it's going to be different in every state you're in because
get arrested and won't play disc golf ever again.
All right. Well, that was a good run.
Sorry, Discmania.
I mean, think of the vlogs you could do from jail, though.
I just stuck my iPhone in here. I'm posting this from my jail cell. I'll be on 2 years.
I mean, let's. Besides that, like, if you were in jail. Wouldn't it be great if we could like get you as like a guest commentator for like live broadcast then as well. Like,
there'd be no internet. They're just a bunch of brick stone walls. I don't think that works.
I don't know. I'm just trying to think of options for you. All right, let's go silly just for a second and say if
let's go silly. Yeah. Like we were somewhere not silly.
No, we were being normal.
I mean, talking about him doing commentary from jail. That's normal. Disc golf fell off the face of the earth tomorrow and you had to get another job, what would be your dream job?
Wow, so silly. I don't know. It'd be another sports job. I think basketball is like my favorite. You know, whenever you hit that game winning shot and you're in an arena, stuff like that. Like, I mean, I think I could have gone.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Winning is an everyday mindset, and we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for Ways to Win. We're kicking off during March Madness. Cal's Kentucky Wildcats are in the hunt, so throughout the tournament, I'm going to call up my friend to ask about his wins, losses, and especially what he's telling his players in the locker room.
You got to win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Somewhere in basketball, if I like fully committed to it. And I think I might have if I didn't have disc golf.
Okay.
I've always been a pretty decent like shooter in basketball, and obviously I'm tall. But I think I would, if I took basketball serious, I would have trained, like put a lot of weight on and like got that done, because I think like I feel like even now I like know what to do, but I just don't know how to do certain moves playing basketball. We played a bunch of basketball in Florida, and I need to work on a couple things. I was hitting some good threes, but that's pretty much it.
Okay. Speaking of off-season activities and such, again, you know, I talked about the trolling earlier and just all the chaos and the fun and the excitement for a lot of fans. What do you make of the off season? Like, was there any genuine surprises, or you're sitting there thinking, man, that I'll be interested to see how blank turns out. Has there been anything that's kind of been shocking or surprising to you?
I don't really think so. I think like going into the season, you always look at the people that did really good the year before or did really bad the year before that should have done good. And like, it's just interesting to see like where they're going to, you know, start out the season. Like, will Calvin start out the season as hot as he finished or his entire last season? Like, it'd be like, you know, like what if Calvin got 30th his first term of the year? Like, that'd be super weird. Or Isaac's definitely missing the cash the first term of the year. There's no chance he does.
Hot take. Isaac,
he misses cash the first four events, and then he'll go win four majors.
Well, but and to be fair, if we're going to timestamp this correctly, Isaac just won like 48 hours ago at like a local B or C tier.
Yeah, A-tier? Savannah Open.
Beat Ezra. A tier. Beat Ezra, and Ezra's really good.
Okay.
It's not that hot of a take, but I think Ezra's going to win a pro tour this year.
Okay, I don't think that's that crazy.
No, based on what we saw at the Pro Tour finale, the way he was putting, if he can
it was ridiculous.
Yeah, like, and obviously we saw that guy hitting putts from everywhere inside of 60 feet and maybe even outside. Like, it was crazy. If he can just bottle that up again, there's no reason why he wouldn't win a Pro Tour event.
And he's like the best. It's actually insane how like, in my mind, Ezra and Isaac are both two top five backhand players in the world. I put Calvin up there with them, and then, gosh, I don't even know who else. Like, those are my three. When I think of backhand players that are just so far above everyone else, like, I put those three. I mean, people don't understand how, like, Ezra is deadly accurate. You put Ezra like 200 feet away and he's always getting up and down. He has this like little spinny, like, I don't know how he does it. He's just like the strongest guy ever, apparently. It just looks like he's like jump putting and it goes like 200 feet.
Yeah.
He's like the best ever at it. And then obviously you have Isaac, which is like weirdest form ever, but mechanically is just set up for success because of it's like no movement in the pull through. It's just like the straightest, cleanest pull through ever. It's like, I'm hoping to get there, but I think my 7 foot wingspan is cursing me.
It does. Trust me. My wingspan is like 6'8" and it was never fun. Like,
yeah.
I legit just feel like I don't have control. Like, I feel like my arms are so far from my body.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
people used to joke, or I would joke that my putting was so bad because I would putt over the top of the baskets and I just burn past them because it's not fun. Well, it was fun, but like Terry here, who's putting up at every basket, and me, who I used to throw them over the basket, and I'm just like, cool, what am I going to do? Get on my knees for every putt?
And then eventually, like, gravity do the work.
I know, and then eventually you learn how to putt. So
I just like aim at the band and go. If you watch my putt from the side, it flies it's on its nose down, and then it'll like come up. It'll hit its peak, like the wind's just beating it down, and like it'll hit its peak, and it'll just go. It'll just like sink like a rocket. Mm. It'll just go like here, sink, and so maybe that's why, because I'm so tall, I'm like, can't put over, so just super nose down, just dive into the basket.
Yeah.
Is there anything in particular that you'd really like to improve? I know you're throwing new plastic and such, but is there anything in particular that's like, yes, I need to get this perfected before the start of the season?
There's like three things. I want consistent backhand. Like, I want my backhand to feel good. That was my issue last year, is my backhand only felt good like maybe 5 tournaments. The other term is just like, I felt like it wasn't even me and I'd shank everywhere. And you know, I did put on like 25 pounds last off season. So that could have been something. Definitely like fix my backhand so it's consistent every weekend. Backhand touch is very important. And I've had like a couple like, oh, like aha moments, but then it kind of like leaves the next day. It's really weird. And then I want to have a very usable all around forehand. Now I have a very, if you just like saw me play when I threw forehands, you'd be like, oh, Gannon's a pretty good forehand player. But I don't have that like big germ, you know, flippy disc flat, get to glide left instead of just like flip too much or lose the angle control. You have like Sullivan Tipton, Micah Groff, like they're all just like, they throw these like straight fairway drivers and can just like they're confident hitting gaps late flip with a mid range on a forehand. And like, I don't have that. I'm more of just like, I think my forehand's like one of the best in the world for scrambling because I have Anheuser overstable discs. And so I just lean out really far with my long limbs. I mean, my forehand's pretty simple. I just set my disc on the angle I want and then I just chop it whatever angle I have. And so it's really easy to scramble. I think I've been top 3 scrambling 2 years in a row now. So, that's helped for sure. But I want to overall get my forehand to where, it's very usable on if I need a straight fairway driver shot.
Well, I think you're describing that it's more of an aggressive power forehand and not so much a finesse touchy forehand.
And I don't even throw that far forehand. Like, I don't, I have a big forehand, but it's just like, I mean, that could be because I throw super overstable for consistency reasons. But the reason I throw overstable is because I'm not, like, too confident. Like, if I was confident, I could flip stuff up and play with the glide. But I think I actually talked with Thomas Gilbert about this on his YouTube channel about, you know, keeping your OB rate really low. And me and Chris Clemens went on for his YouTube channel. And I just talk about, like, I will sacrifice 50 to 75 feet of distance to stay in bounds. And so that's me with my forehand. Like, I can so easily get a forehand to a lot of baskets, but in tournaments I'm like, you gotta throw really overstable, that way you know it's always going to go one direction. So if I can get to a point where I'm confident with a little bit of a flip up to get that glide, I think that could increase my forehand.
Okay, well, there's when do you feel like most of that work? Because like you just said, Midwest completely blanketed, not only in just like feet of snow, but literally 40 below with wind chill these last couple of days or moving into the next day or two. Mm-hmm. We've just had this nasty cold spell coming through. Where and when will more of the actual field work, so to speak, get worked out and get started for you?
Just like, yeah, like a week before All-Stars maybe.
Okay.
My dad lives in Florida, about an hour and a half south of All-Stars.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'll probably go down there, test out some discs. I mean, I think it's going to be kind of funny. I think I'll have more discs in my bag than I want to have, but I think I'll still use like only like 10 of them. I think I'll probably just grab like, I'll probably have like a neutral driver and I'll probably throw on every single shot, even though I need something like overstable just because I'm like confident with one disc. That's usually what happens. And then the other discs are kind of utility discs, but yeah, if I can get my bag figured out, which I feel like I already have a good, I've kind of been going back and forth. I mean, just feeling a disc, I can kind of see how it's going to fly and if it has the right stiffness I want or the right shape of the dome and stuff like that. And so it made it easy to like, kind of like, hey, these discs I'm for sure won't use. And then I'll get a pile of the stuff I will use. And then I'll be like, you know, maybe I usually like set up my discs in like five stacks, like over super overstable, overstable, straight, understable, super understable. And the stacks will have like 10 discs and I'll just pick out a couple of my favorites from each stack and then those will fill the slots. And so that's kind of how I've been building my bag so far.
So your bag, let's talk about the discs just real quick. Do you plan on throwing all, or is there a requirement, all new Discmania discs? Are you going to go back to some of the older molded Discmania discs? I think I saw a list of discs somewhere, maybe on Instagram or you were going to do, I think maybe you did a video even, and it was in the comment or it was in the video comments. What is your bag going to look like as far as like new versus old Discmania?
Yeah, I'm allowed to throw whatever I want. Any Discmania disc. Obviously I want to lean toward the new stuff. You know, I want to promote it. I want to prove that it's good. You know, Kyle last year won Waco with 100% Discmania made stuff. And so it's clearly good enough to win. But then I also have that side of me that I like to throw like rare runs for some reason. It's just kind of fun. I mean, so, I'll definitely have a mix of both to start out for sure. I'm probably 50-50 right now. Right now I've been liking the Discmania made, putters and mid ranges a lot. And then, and even about half of the fairways, and then drivers are, I throw some of the old ones.
Okay. Yeah. I asked Eagle the same question. What was the dumbest, craziest, silliest, out of whack, whatever comment or question or yeah, comment probably, or assumption or guess that you saw within this whole, you know, negotiation and whatnot? What were some of the things that stuck out to you, or you maybe just shook your head or rolled your eyes at?
I mean, just so many dumb things. It's like, one was like, it doesn't even, it's stupid because it doesn't make any sense. It's just like, Gannon's going to Latitude and his mom's going to Lone Star. It's like, sure. Why is my mom in this? It's like,
we're talking
sense.
About my mom.
Yeah. I mean, there was a bunch. There was one comment on the announcement post of like, hey, I'm on Team Discmania. Some guy commented, would be crazy if it's true. Like, it was like a... Like, what? I'm, like, so confused.
Well, if you troll long enough, sometimes they may not believe you, and that might have been one of those cases.
I wish I, like, remembered all the crazy stuff that was, like, because, I mean, me and Alden all the time will screenshot it, text it to each other, send it in the chat, and we'll be like, there's no way someone just said this. Like, they can't be that dumb or something. I don't know. You know.
Okay.
Maybe they just didn't read it, but that's kind of how we look at that.
Yeah, I would just assume, and of course, sometimes I'm in the know, sometimes I'm not, but when I read some of the other stuff that people put together, and they don't preface it with, like, tinfoil hat theory, and then they go on and say, you know, this is crazy, but they just put it out there, and just the sheer, I'll say, cockiness of or certainty of some of these people that are like, here's what's happening, and I look at it, I'm like, what planet
it's
are you on?
See,
yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of fun to see the people that are like super right about it too. Like sure. Maybe it's just their like assumption, but obviously being a player, I know a lot more than the common folk. But like, there was like one comment where I was like, oh my gosh, he literally used 5 different like people or examples, and he got every single thing right, and people were calling him crazy, but they were right.
Okay.
So that's, it's like, it's kind of fun to see like the people that actually do get it right. It's kind of, it's kind of interesting. Very few.
It's a pro disc golfer's burner account. Yeah. Just someone.
Yeah. So never mind.
How much
on that's McBeth's burner account.
One of my final questions would be is like, on a scale of 1 to 10, how much do you, are you in the know? And I know, you know, more than, you know, the average just fan, but let's just say there were 50 moves this offseason. That's probably too many, but let's just say there were 50. If there were 50, how many would you say you know about? What would be the percentage of the number that you feel like you pretty much knew about it before it happened?
Probably 45.
Okay. You're like in the know. Yeah. And
I'm in the know. There's like very few I don't know.
Okay.
I usually find out pretty early on. I'm not really sure how, but you definitely find out early on.
Yeah, players talk. It gets around. I mean,
I agree with that. And
players talk, and then you say, "Hey, don't tell anyone," and then that dumb person tells someone, and then it keeps going and going and going, and you punch all your friends in the face.
Yeah, most of, I truly feel most of the leaks are probably, you could probably track back to the player.
Yeah, I would agree. Because, I mean, people tell me not to say stuff, and then I'll say it. I just can't help myself. It's like...
All right, so you're part of the problem.
Yeah, I'm the problem. People don't tell me. I feel like I personally did a really good job. It's more about me leaking other people's information.
I was good with mine. Everybody else, though, loose lips.
Yeah.
Let me tell you.
Just a big old megaphone for everybody.
Yeah.
All right. So I think I saw, we'll let you get going here in a second. I think I saw on social media you just finished up the Avengers Tower. Is that right? What is your next, what's your next big Lego build?
Keep in mind all the time you don't have to get your license, but go on. Tell us about your Lego build.
You can stay inside for Legos. You're not Legoing outdoors.
I think I need the Eiffel Tower. It's like 10,000 pieces. Mm-hmm. Oh gosh, I don't even know what. I mean, there's a lot left that I could probably get, but I think Eiffel Tower was one of. I like the realistic builds. So like Titanic was cool. Mm. The Lego Tower is cool, the Avengers Tower is cool because it's like, it's in the movies or whatever, and it's kind of cool because stuff like that too are like Star Wars, like the Millennium Falcon. Like if you're more in depth in the movies and stuff, it like has all these little tiny like one piece references, and like you build the rooms that like the scenes are in the movie and stuff like that. And so it's really cool. And then obviously like, the Titanic was just like massive. It was like almost 10,000 pieces, and you built all the little rooms.
Well, that's what it ended up in.
Yeah, I was just going to say.
Too soon?
I mean, I don't think one of my big Legos is going to survive. Alden's going to do something to one of them.
Oh,
but you're not bringing them on the road with you.
No, I'm gonna go to a Lego store, accidentally buy like way too much money in Legos one weekend on tour, build them, and then he's going to smash it for a video. I guarantee.
Have you ever? I mean, there's got to be. Obviously, you're building Lego sets. I would assume, I think I know there are websites you can go to that have like custom Lego builds. Have you ever thought about doing that? Like,
I never thought about that.
Yeah, like if you run out of like the Avengers Tower, I'm sure you could go online and look up. You know, hey, I want the White House, even though I think there is already a White House one. But and then they give you all the pieces that you need. You could probably order them online and put them together. I know there's custom builds online because my son for a while was really into it, and we were kind of exploring that for a little bit. So
I will say my bank account is in big trouble because they're building a Lego store right next to my house.
I think they knew something.
Yeah.
Just,
I might just have some equity stake in the company after like next year.
There you go.
Yeah,
I like
yeah.
it.
Maybe
like
maybe it. maybe let mom run the purse strings. Yeah, there
you go. Okay.
Probably the smart move. All right, Gannon. You know, and I know I posted a video. It's funny to think of some of the first times I saw you interacted with you. You know, a few years ago at Junior Worlds, and it's been incredible to watch this journey you've been on. Obviously. Watching you take down the major at USDGC, a moment you'll never forget, but even me as a fan and as a media personality, being able to take this all in has been incredible, and we certainly love watching this, and to know that you're just 18 and have so much more growth and opportunity in the game has been incredible, and we wish you nothing but the best. Before we let you go, any final words or parting shots you'd like to share with the world out there?
Reinvent your game.
What a sellout. Everyone, that's Gannon Burr. We love it. He's repping the brand,
Shield.
Repping the Shield. Repping the Shield wants you to reinvent your game. We're so excited. You and your good buddy, Alden, as we've talked about quite a bit here tonight. Everyone that is freshly sponsored, Gannon Burr.
We'll be looking forward to the new Gannon disc when it comes out.
We'll be checking on it. I'm sure he'll be posting everywhere from Discmania.
You guys will not want to miss it. It's going to be special.
Love it. All right, everyone. Gannon Burr from Discmania signing out. Thanks for joining us tonight, pal. We'll see you soon.
Good luck in Iowa.
Thank you. Thank
see ya.
Oh, Gannon. Do you think he caucused?
He was probably there.
Yeah?
He was probably there. He's old enough now.
He is.
I'm sure he was over taking it all in.
Taking all the politics in.
That's what I would do.
Yeah.
No, I wouldn't. All right. Holy cow, what a night. Someone asked, is this the most guests we've ever had?
No.
The answer to that is certainly no, but overall average rating, yes. When you compile those three ratings and then take an average, Dutch is a little over 1,000, and then you're talking about Eagle along with Gannon. Yeah, we not too shabby tonight for sure.
Not too shabby at all.
All right, I say we close out what I consider that a full regular show.
Oh, got it. And then some.
Let's close that out in an official capacity. Then we'll come back and. Maybe our after show will feel a little bit more like parts of our normal show. We'll talk about a little of the other news and break that down in the after show and then talk about whatever, and we'll go from there. But I think for a regular show, I think that's enough. I'm going to already separate probably all three of those interviews and put them out separately as well for anyone that wants to take them in later on our channel or if you missed one or whatever. All right. What a night. Holy cow. Thank you to all three of our incredible guests. So awesome to see the growth and the development of the game, to see these new contracts and these opportunities that all of these players are having. Extra special that Dutch, old school Smashy as well, to join us and to make his announcement exclusive to hear to all of us here on Smashbox, and to get the insights and so much more additional helpful information out of both Gannon and Eagle was incredible. So we can't thank you guys enough, and I think the fans all feel that way as well. Even Brian Schweberger, who's out on the board, polishing off his latest trophy. So for Gannon, along with Dutch, along with Eagle McMahon, congratulations to all three of you gentlemen. Oh, we wish you the best of luck. Looking forward to more of you in 2024. For Johnny V, I'm Terry Miller, the Disc Golf Guy. That has been our regular show in Smashbox Podcast Episode 49. We'll have some fun in the after show. We'll see you there when you step inside the Smashbox.
Thank you to our $2 and above patrons. Your name is listed below in the credits. If you are interested in being listed as a producer in the Smashbox TV credits and supporting this and other fine podcasts, please visit patreon.com/smashboxtv.